Yes, we are ready.
Very good. Then I will go ahead and virtually call this meeting of the Grover Beach City Council for Monday, October 5th, 2020 to order. And I will go ahead and please reflect with me on a moment of silence. We've done a number of specific people recently, but I'd like to just have a moment of silence for those who don't get the acknowledgement that they have passed. Their friends and their families are missing them as much as anyone who's been in the news. So I'd just like to take a moment of silence for those that have passed who the rest of us have not been aware of.
Yes, we are ready.
Very good. Then I will go ahead and virtually call this meeting of the Grover Beach City Council for Monday, October 5th, 2020 to order.
And
I will go ahead and please reflect with me on the silence.
And Wendy, if I may, we'll go ahead and bring back into the council. We did just hear kind of the recorded version going out as well. So I was not, that was not me speaking the second time.
I don't know what that was.
Okay. Very good. Then, well, I will say thank you for those who were able to participate in the moment of silence. So then, if you would all in your hearts follow along with me as I lead the flag salute. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Very good. Thank you, everyone. So with that, City Clerk Sims, I will ask you to do the roll call, please.
Yes. Councilmember Lance.
Here.
Councilmember Shaw.
Here.
I see her. Councilmember Shaw.
Sorry, here. I thought I had unmuted.
Mayor Pro Tem Bright.
Here.
And Mayor Lee.
And I'm here as well. So we do have a quorum, so we will continue. And before we go to our closed session announcements, I will remind folks that in compliance with the state and county shelter at home orders, meetings are being held by teleconference only until further notice. This meeting can be viewed on channel 20 and is available on live streaming on the city's website and on www.slow-span.org. Any member of the public may provide public comments during the meeting by calling in at area code 805-321-6639, and those phone lines are currently open. So with that, I will turn it to our city clerk, our city attorney, for a summary of our closed session announcements.
Thank you, Mayor. On Monday night, September 21st, council met in closed session regarding two items. The first item was a conference with real property negotiated for the sale or lease of city property. APNs number 060-242-44 and 45. Agency negotiators were Matt Robinson, City Manager David Hale, City Attorney, and Bruce Buckingham, Director of Community Development. Negotiating parties were Veterans of Foreign Wars, National Home for Children, and this was done pursuant to Government Code Section 54956.8. The second item that was on the agenda was a public employee performance evaluation consistent with Government Code Section 54957B1. It was in regards to the City Manager. There were no reportable items or actions out of either one of those agenda items.
Very good. Thank you, sir. We will then take us to our agenda review, where at this time the council will review the order of business to be conducted and receive requests from any of the council members or staff to see if there's any changes in the order of the day. So does any members of the council have any changes they want to make? If not, feel free to make a motion.
I'll make a motion that we accept the agenda as written.
I'll second that.
Very good. We have a motion and a second. All those in favor say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Very good. We will proceed as published, so which does take us into our ceremonial calendar, where this evening we do have two proclamations. We have a first proclamation for Fire Prevention Week, which is October 4th through the 10th. And I understand, Chief Lieberman, you're here to accept on behalf of Fire Prevention Week. So with that, I will go ahead and acknowledge this proclamation of the Grover Beach City Council designating the month of October for the week of October 4th through 10th, 2020 as Fire Prevention Week. Whereas the City of Grover Beach is committed to ensuring the safety and security of all those living and visiting Grover Beach. And whereas fire is a serious public safety concern, both locally and nationally, and homes are the locations where people are at greatest risk from fire. Whereas home fires have killed more than 2,630 people in the United States in 2017, according to the National Fire Protection Agency, and fire departments in the United States have responded to over 357,000 home fires. Whereas cooking is the leading cause of home fires in the United States, and fire departments have responded to more than 173,000 200 annually between fires between 2013 and 2017. Whereas two of every five home fires start in the kitchen, with 31% of these fires resulting from unintended cooking, and more than half of the reported non-fatal home cooking fire injuries occurring when the visitors tried to fight the fire themselves. So whereas Grover Beach residents should stay in the kitchen when frying food on the stovetop, and they should keep a 3-foot kid-free zone around cooking areas and keep anything that can catch fire away from stovetops. And residents who have planned and practiced a home fire escape plan are more prepared and will therefore be more likely to survive a fire, and working smoke alarms cut the risk of dying in reported home fires in half. Whereas Grover Beach first responders are dedicated to reducing the occurrence of home fires and home fire injuries through prevention and protection education. Whereas Grover Beach residents are responsive to public education measures and are able to take personal steps to increase their safety from fire, especially in their homes. So whereas that on 2020 Fire Prevention Week with a theme of serve up fire safety in the kitchen effectively reminds us to stay alert and use caution when cooking to reduce the risk of cooking of kitchen fires. So with that, I'll turn it over to Chief Lieberman and see if he has any comments that he wants to say about Fire Prevention Week. Thank you, Chief.
Well, thank you, Mayor and Council, for this recognition. And Mayor, why don't you take a moment to catch your breath after reading all of that? I think, you know, with the state of our state right now with wildfire, this seems like a really insignificant thing. So let's just consider it as a baby step, and working safely in the kitchen and with all the distractions that we have in everyday life, really focusing on not leaving food unattended on the cooktop and making sure that kids and large animals, I heard about some bigger sized dogs, can't jump up and grab handles of cooking pots that are on the stove. I just think we can really start caring for our community and reducing the risk of injury or worse, by just these simple measures, along with a plan and making sure those smoke detectors are in order. So again, I appreciate the council sharing this proclamation with our community and truly appreciate it. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you, Chief. And even though this is Fire Prevention Week, if you wanted to take just a moment to kind of give a moment of remembrance or update on the fires that you just returned from and the work that that our firefighters have been doing throughout the state in fighting the fires that have been burning recently.
Thank you. Currently, we have two folks that are deployed. We have Engineer Joe Silva, who's on the North Fire in Butte County, working out of Chico. He's specially trained as what's called a heavy equipment boss. He supervises contract hired heavy equipment operators to build fire breaks, things of those natures, and then goes back afterwards to start repairing environmental damage that may have been caused by these firefighting efforts. Tom Huey is a captain with our agency. He's trained as a strike team leader. So he is training to take out a group of five fire engines, and he's working the glass fire in Napa, Sonoma, Lake counties. Tom's hard at work there. I just returned from the August complex, which sadly today became even more significant as the largest fire in California history as it passed the million acre mark. Thankfully, containment's increasing. but this is a dangerous time in our community. A lot of people have been impacted by losing loved ones, injured family members, and losing their homes. Just a reminder that we're not halfway through fire season yet. This was just a confluence of a lot of lightning activity in Northern California. And later this month in early November is when we start to see the Santa Ana wind conditions that impact Southern California. So all fingers are crossed that people are being careful in this dry vegetation, but we anticipate staying busy.
Very good. Thank you for that update and those comments. And it's just another reason to be safe in the kitchen as nature takes its course in fires. Well enough, but what we can do to make sure that man-made fires don't add to the natural disasters that are occurring. So let's see if there's any members of the council that want to make any comments on this ceremonial item. Council member or Mayor Pro Tem Bright.
Thank you. I don't know if am I muted? I don't know.
No, you are okay.
Thank you. Well, as always, I just want to thank you, Chief, and all of your staff for all that you do. We're just so happy and proud to have you with us. And so just be safe, please. And thank you.
And Councilmember Shaw.
Yes, I echo those comments. We're always thankful for our firefighters, but this summer has just been above and beyond in so many ways. And we just hope that you all can stay safe, and we just appreciate you. So thank you.
And Councilmember Lance.
Just incredibly grateful. Thank you for your service, and thank you to all the firefighters in our state and everybody that's helping fight these. It's truly, truly devastating. So we just continue to pray and have you guys in our thoughts that everybody would stay safe.
Thank you. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you, everyone, for those comments. And Chief, thank you for all the work that you and your staff do. So with that, we will go ahead and move into our next ceremonial calendar item. And I've asked Councilmember Shaw to read a proclamation for Domestic Violence Awareness Month.
Thank you. I'm going to bring it up on my screen. Proclamation of the Grover Beach City Council designating the month of October 2020 as Domestic Violence Awareness Month from Stand Strong. Whereas domestic violence, also known as intimate partner violence, is a systematic pattern of abuse behavior to gain power and control through use of physical violence, sexual violence, threats, and/or emotional abuse used by one intimate partner against another. And whereas an average of 20 people per minute are physically abused by intimate partners in the United States, which equates for 10 million abuse victims annually, and whereas approximately 40% of California women experience physical intimate partner violence in their lifetimes, while 1 in 3 female murder victims in the United States are killed by intimate partners, and whereas children exposed to intimate partner violence in the home experience long-term consequences such as difficulty in school, substance abuse, and serious adult health problems. And whereas Stand Strong provided a variety of prevention and direct services to intimate partner violence victims last year, including assisting over 939 clients in providing 3,175 nights of shelter to clients and responding to 527 crisis calls. Whereas intimate partner violence has a significant economic impact, as it is estimated 8 million days of work are lost nationwide yearly as the result of intimate partner violence. And whereas families who experience intimate partner violence are 40% more likely to become homeless, and whereas we recognize the survivors and victims of intimate partner violence embody incredible strength and resilience to overcome trauma and abuse to build lives free of violence. And now therefore be it resolved that the Grover Beach City Council is proclaiming October 2020 as the Domestic Violence Awareness Month and urges all citizens to observe this month by becoming aware of the tragedy of intimate partner violence by supporting those who are working towards its end and by participating in community awareness efforts. Oh, I'm muted.
You mean that would have been a double unmuting, so which made me mute again. So, but we do have Sandra Gresham here from Stand Strong, and we do appreciate her being here tonight to accept the proclamation. So, and see if there's any words that she wanted to share.
Sure. Good evening, and thank you, Mayor and Council members. I'm a new resident of Grover Beach. Moved here in July. And I am delighted to be here and delighted to share the good work that Stand Strong does throughout SLO County. So the organization has been around for 41 years, and it was formerly known as the Women's Shelter Program, and in 2017 did an update and rebranding. Our services have grown from one emergency shelter to a 24/7 365 crisis line with free translation services, including ASL. We have 10 units of transitional housing, five of which are in Grover, legal assistance for civil matters, counseling, Latina and Latinx services, trauma treatment for children, and domestic violence prevention programs in local schools. Compared to the same time period last year, due to the incredible spike in domestic and intimate partner violence during COVID, the demand for our services has doubled or even tripled in some of our program areas. 51% of our clients are adults, and 49% of our clients are children who need, you know, trauma-informed counseling and care. So October is Domestic Violence Awareness Month, and we work closely with community partners and also independently to help raise awareness of these sobering statistics and offer advice on how to help. Society tells you that they're being hurt by their partner or spouse or ex. Believe them. That's their first step towards healing and safety. But you'd be amazed how many times victims finally summon the courage to speak up and then they're not believed or they're ridiculed or ignored. But they can get immediate help or referrals for other kinds of help that we might not offer by calling our 24/7 crisis line at 805-781-6400, or by visiting our website, which has a safety release. A lot of times people who are suffering at the hands of an abuser won't be able to make a phone call, but they might be able to visit online and they can look at the services and create a plan of what to do when the opportunity presents itself. And then they can exit that website and it's not traceable. So we have, you know, we have a lot of services and a lot of programs to help our entire county, including Grover. And everyone can help. Everyone can help raise awareness. You can look on our website for Domestic Violence Awareness Month information and events that we're hosting. We, on our social media platforms, Facebook, Twitter, and Insta, you can also look at those. And please, please, please look at them and please like and share those social media posts because it really does help us raise awareness. And with that, I will say thank you again to the mayor and the council for this proclamation. It means a lot to us. And by and large, it will help more members of our community who need it really the most. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you for those comments. And I know domestic violence is one of those situations where everyone is working to never have to address it again. But until we do, we have a lot of work that needs to be done. And believing is that first step. So let's see if there's any members of the council that you want to say anything on this item. So Councilmember Lance.
I can't thank you enough for all the work that you guys do in the county. It's so, so important, especially with COVID right now. I can't say anything beyond that. I'm truly grateful. Thank you.
Councilmember Shaw.
Yes, just welcome to Grover Beach. We're happy to have you. And yes, every year we read these statistics, and I'm just thankful you're here to share, because given the numbers, every one of us knows someone affected by this, and maybe they don't want to talk to us about it. And, you know, we're just so glad you're here. And I do follow your social media, and it's really fun to follow. You give a lot of good information, so I do encourage people to do that. So thank you.
Thank you. I'll pass along that information to my social coordinator.
And Mayor Pro Tem Bright.
Yes, I just want to echo those sentiments, and as well as to welcome you to Grover Beach. It does. It brings tears to my eyes when you mentioned the children. But also, if someone wanted to, say, contribute to you to Stand Strong, would they go to your website? Is that how they would do that sort of thing?
Yes. So our website, standstrongnow.org, it makes it very easy to donate. And during October, we have a generous donor who's offered a match up to a total of $13,000. So anybody who donates during the month of October will get their money matched.
That's
and true. You can also volunteer. You can sign up to volunteer on our website, too. There's lots of opportunities to even volunteer remotely.
Terrific. Thank you.
Thank you.
Very good. Thank you for joining this evening. And I will go ahead and close this ceremonial item by just reminding folks that the crisis line for Stand Strong is area code 805-781-6400. So thank you, Ms. Gresham, for being here. And we will move on to our presentations this evening, of which we don't have any presentations, which will take us to our public communication items.
Where then there isn't any presentations, and then we will open public comment. So we'll put you in then.
So, and I am hearing our deputy city clerk in my ear.
Just so, how you heard me come over, that it'll be exactly the same. Okay. All right, hold on.
So very, very good. So I will go ahead and open up our public communications item this evening, where you can call in at area code 805-321-6639 if you'd like to make any public comments at this time. And so at the moment, the council will allow public communications with additional communication, if necessary, allowed after the regular business items. Any member of the public may address the council for a period not to exceed 3 minutes total on any item of interest within the jurisdiction of this council. The council will listen to all communications. However, in compliance with the Brown Act, the council cannot act on items that are not on tonight's agenda. So I'll turn to our deputy city clerk and see who we have on the line for public communications. And perhaps it was
Wendy or Nicole. Can we have the public communications speakers?
Yes, we have Jesse Zumbadwa.
Very good, Jesse. Thank you for joining us this evening. You have 3 minutes. And Nicole, we are getting a little bit of feedback from your station. So just an FYI.
Oh, hi. I've lived in the various towns here in San Luis Obispo County my entire life, and I've never really needed any reason to talk with the city council, but I've been a little disenfranchised lately with some of the state-level bureaucracy, and I'm trying to get some help or guidance. I'm here representing my employer, Confidence Analytics, and to give you the short of it, our laboratory has been trying to contact the BCC for several months in order to acquire a license. And in that time, we've sent them a steady flow of validations and specialized forms that cover the different tests that we do for things like terpenes, cannabinoids, and things of that nature. And we really haven't gotten any feedback. The issue with that is, you know, something as mundane as like a formatting issue could leave all of our data kind of invalidated. And we've requested, you know, simple questions just to kind of see how we're doing. And, you know, a month later, we've been told that they are still reviewing our materials. And, you know, I know with COVID and everything, everything's kind of slowed down and we've had to adapt. But at the same time, our rent costs, you know, and our wages are still there. And we have no way of really connecting revenue for the time being. So I'm just trying to see if maybe there's some way we might be able to reach out to them on a local level and just let them know how serious we take our local businesses here or something along that nature. Or if there's someone I could get in contact with that might be able to inquire on our behalf, that'd be great.
Very good. Thank you, Jesse. And before we go to our next public commenter, I just I'll turn that over that item over to our city manager, and in the hopes that he can help him offline and connect him with the right folks at the state level. So, and then I will also just mention that someone did reach out to me from Confidence Analytics in an effort to possibly do some non-cannabis related testing as well. And so there is that effort underway as well. So, but city manager, I'll let you contact him directly and work on those details. And next we'll go to our city clerk and see who else we have on the line for public comment.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Jesse. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Mayor, we have Debbie Aguirre on the phone. But I believe she wants to speak on the street item, not just under public comment.
Okay, very good. So is there anyone else under public comment for this evening then?
No, I do not see anyone. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you very much. I will go ahead and close public comment, bring it back to the council. And that'll take us to our consent agenda this evening, where we do have several routine items that are on the agenda that are scheduled for consideration as a group. The recommendations for each item are included in the parentheses. Members of the public may speak on any items listed on the consent calendar after when I open it up at the after we ask for council questions. So just as a reminder, if there are any members of the public who wish to address the council on any items on the consent agenda, please call in at 805-321-6639, and we may pull it for discussion at that time prior to proceeding into the regular business portion of the agenda. So let's see if there's any members of the council that have any questions on the consent agenda. So Councilmember Lance.
There was just one non-substantive grammar thing on the minutes, just an extra word. So I already spoke to staff about that, and so that's just my comment I would make on item 3.
Very good. Councilmember Shaw, any questions or comments?
No questions or comments for me. Thank you.
Very good. Mayor Pro Tem Bright.
I have no questions or comments. Thank you.
Very good. Then I will go ahead and I had no questions. I will go ahead and open this up to the public, see if there's any member of the public on the line that wants to speak on any item on the consent agenda. If so, please call in at 805-321-6639. And I'll turn it over to our city clerk and see if there's anyone on the line for the consent agenda.
No, I have no one on the line for consent.
Very good. Then we'll go ahead and close public comment on the consent agenda and bring it back to the council for action.
I will make a motion that we accept the consent agenda as presented.
I'll second, just with the small change in the minutes.
Very good. So we have a motion and a second with that small change, and I'll just make a quick comment on the fact that we do have an acceptance of a waterline project as well as street rehab projects, and so as is our capital projects programs are continuing to move forward. We are seeing them close out as well in a timely fashion. So I appreciate staff's efforts to keep all of these moving forward. So with that, we'll do a roll call, please.
Mayor Pro Tem Bright?
Yes.
Councilmember Lance?
Yes.
Councilmember Shaw?
Yes.
Mayor Lee?
Yes, so we do have an approved consent agenda. So thank you to staff for putting all those items together and for working on the next street rehab and repair project. So we have no public hearings this evening, so this will take us into our regular business, which the first item is the citywide street repair light maintenance project. And in advance in anticipation of having public comments on this item, if any member of the public wishes to comment, please call in at 805-321-6639, and I will turn this over to our city manager for a brief introduction.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, members of the council. Just a few comments before I turn it over to our public works director, Mr. Ray. Just to underscore for the council that we've made substantial progress in our work towards fixing local residential streets under Measure K-14. Right now, we've fixed about 50% of such local residential streets. With our next two projects lined up, the council just approved an action for designing the next project that will get underway here shortly. And then very soon we'll be bringing forward an award of construction contract for our next project. So there's a lot of street activity that's taking place very soon. And then back in July, as you recall, you identified the next four projects beyond these two that are in progress. So right now we have six projects that are identified and ready to go forward as part of our street rehab projects. So tonight's item is really an augmentation. It's a light maintenance street item that goes beyond the street rehab work we're doing for the other projects. And so I want to thank Mr. Ray for his work on the light maintenance project. And also lastly, I'll just say that this is the first of our new presentations with a new presentation format that we're test driving tonight. So Mr. Ray is the first one to go through this presentation format that I think is a little more modern format compared to the ones we've been using for quite a while. So with that, Mr. Ray, the floor is yours.
Well, thank you. I appreciate being the guinea pig for the new format.
No pressure.
And to kind of add to what City Manager Bronson said, you know, our Major K Street program is primarily rehabilitation and replacement of asphalt pavements throughout town. But we know from our pavement maintenance program that also maintaining streets that are in reasonably good condition is critical to extending the life of those streets beyond their normal lifespan and ultimately saving the city tremendous amounts of money. So with that, if Wendy can cue up the presentation, we'll get to see that new format.
I think this is called anticipation.
Yes, thank you.
Wendy or Nicole, are you there?
This is Nicole, but I think Wendy's trying to share her screen.
Sorry, I was under the impression that Aaron was going to be running the presentation, so just a moment.
So maybe while the presentation is coming in, perhaps I can put the city manager on the spot. I know there's been a number of questions in the community with regards to the cost of the Measure K program and the fact that we've referenced the fact that we've completed close to 50% of the streets, but then there's also the budgetary component of that. And so as we're now that the screen is up, I'll finish my question and see if the city manager can just give us a quick update on the current cost per $100,000 of our Measure K program to date.
So overall, we have completed 50% of local streets, and we have completed, I believe it is just under that amount in the overall expenditure of the Measure K $14. So we are on track, we are on schedule and under budget with our Measure K 14 program.
And I apologize for putting you on the spot for with that question, but I was also recalling a presentation that you and Mr. Ray had given us a couple weeks ago, where the cost per 100,000 was expected at this point to be approximately $100 per 100,000, where in actuality we are closer to $85 per 100,000 in cost. So we are from a return on investment definitely ahead of schedule. Is my memory correct?
Yes. I'm sorry, I thought you were talking about the cost per block of the project, but we're talking about the assessed valuation amount and the property tax amount that we are assessed. You are correct. We are right now at roughly $85 per $100,000 valuation in property taxes, and that is the same amount that we've had for the last 3 years. The original estimate in 2017 showed us to be roughly at $100 by now. So we have been able to keep to within the current level of the property tax rate, given the increase in assessed valuation. We've been increasing by about 5% a year for the last several years. Our property values are increasing. There's more investment happening in the community, and that's enabling us to do our road projects within the current rate that we have in place. And now we've seen that achieving 50% of the overall K-14 goal.
Very good. Thank you. Thank you for that update. And it looks like our presentation is on screen. So, Mr. Ray, I will turn it back over to you.
That's great. Thank you, Honorable Mayor and City Council. Thank you, City Manager Bronson. So moving directly in to the next slide, we'll just start right away. So we've just talked about the Measure K-14 program. We're in the sixth year of the program.
Greg, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I'm watching the slow span screen, and it's saying that they cannot display the content. So I don't think that our viewers can see what we're seeing.
Okay.
And we're all seeing it, I believe, correct?
Let me see. Hold on.
I can see it here. So let's see if City Clerk, let us know if we need to take a 5-minute technical break.
I'm trying to get it.
Since we're in a brief pause, I might add to what Matt said. The other component of that less than expected cost per $100,000 home valuation was a wise decision on behalf of the council to sell or purchase, I guess it's really a sell, additional bonds during a climate when the interest rates were quite favorable. So that has also helped us out.
Very good. Nice. Good remembrance of that bond rate discussion as well.
I can't do both.
So let's go ahead and take a 5-minute break, and so we'll come back as we'll go ahead and AGP, let's go ahead and take a 5-minute technical break, please, just to, and so we can allow Ms. Sims to. Okay, is everybody back online? Okay, very good. I think our city clerk is trying to get it out of the presentation into full screen mode, if I was to read her mind. There we go. I think we have a full screen presentation. So I see Mr. Ray back to me. So Mr. Ray, so AGP, are you able to see and broadcast the screen? Very good. Mr. Ray, the floor is yours.
Great. Let's go ahead and again jump to that first slide. Thank you so much. So as we were talking about, we're in the sixth year of a multi-year major K-14 project. And this project was originally anticipated to take as many as 25 years to complete. And we're 50% done since really starting in 2015 or late 2014. The total program could issue up to $48 million in bonds for repair of residential streets. As City Manager Bronson has mentioned, the 10th project is out to bid. And bids will open here in a couple days. The 11th project is now in design, as awarded tonight by City Council. 200 city blocks have been completed. And again, roughly 28 million of the 48 million in bonds have been issued, but not all the money has been spent of the 28. We've been averaging about $4 million per year in investment in our local streets. Next slide, please. The map on the left shows completed projects in green and projects that are either in progress or have recently been selected by the council. As City Manager Bronson mentioned, these are projects that are on the next few projects or phases of Major K ahead of us in blue there. So on the 22nd of July, the council identified four additional Measure K-14 projects covering a total of 54 additional blocks of work. But remember that Measure K-14 does not cover major streets of regional nature with high traffic volumes. And those are really our most significant streets, including West Grand Avenue, Oak Park Boulevard, 4th Street, Farrell Road, The Pike, for example. Next slide. So just a quick educational moment on light maintenance or street maintenance in general. Streets fail by really one of two means, either excessive loading, which is where you see the streets get potholes and major cracking, or just simply evaporation and drying of the surface, which is mostly what we see in Grover Beach. Light maintenance is a process that will fill the cracks that form in a street that's drying out. It seals the surface to prevent additional drying out of the volatiles that are in the asphalt compound, and it does restore the fine aggregate and the very surface of that asphalt pavement. A regular light maintenance program can extend the life of streets by as much as 30 years beyond their normal life, being roughly 20 years. So maybe as much as 50 years a street could be extended out to. This light maintenance program is very cost effective, mostly if used between 5 and 7 years after resurfacing, and then on about a 5 to 7 year rotation after that. And then finally, only on streets where you generally observe mild cracking. It cannot repair significant deterioration of the pavement. Next slide, please. Staff recommends the council provide direction to proceed with the citywide light maintenance project as described in your staff report and shown on the map. The last light maintenance project was undertaken in 2015-16. This project has an anticipated cost of just under $500,000 and includes 23 street segments. Next slide. And there you go. There's the map showing the street segments that have been selected by staff that meet the criteria of age and condition of the street as appropriate for light maintenance. The list of streets are on the right. We could come back to that if council has any questions about specific segments. So I won't go through and read them independently, but or I could if so desired by council. So I'd say next slide, please. So pending council direction, the staff would proceed with bidding immediately. We anticipate we would award in late fall with construction starting by the end of the year. This does include all the streets recommended by staff as most appropriate due to their condition and age, essentially. But council could choose to add in additional segments. And we anticipate the next light maintenance project could be before council in as few as 2 years. Next slide, please. Again, the anticipated cost is just under $500,000, and this is we'll be using Measure K-14 funding, which is appropriate and approved for this purpose. So looking at the alternatives, Council, we ask that you receive information on the proposed list of street segments recommended for light maintenance and provide direction to staff regarding the list or provide alternate policy direction to staff. And with that, I'll turn it over back to the Council for questions and comments. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Ray, for that presentation. Let's see what questions we have from Council. Let's start with Mayor Pro Tem Bright.
Thank you. Well, thank you for the presentation. I like the format. So once we got it going, it worked very well. So I guess my question, I have just a couple. So did you do how did you come up with this list of streets? Did you go by the PCI, or did you take a tour around the town? What was kind of the criteria?
Both of those and more. looking back at the year that the street was constructed, we basically created a large database to begin with, and we filtered out streets that were either constructed too recently or far too long ago. We filtered out PCIs that were below the 50s, as a light maintenance project wouldn't really be appropriate to put on a street in the 40s, for example, and filtered out streets that were, 60 and above or well above 60. Those streets are in good enough shape they can probably go another couple of years before light maintenance is necessary. And then that followed by what I'd call a windshield survey, a drive-through to make sure that the data we had in our database matches the actual field conditions that we found in the streets.
So then would you say that these streets are all of those pretty much within our city that are within that criteria?
I believe they're all that fit the criteria of really being in good enough condition. The light maintenance will provide that benefit that we hope so, which is extending the life 5 to 7 years at very little cost. Hopefully filling in cracks and things that are existing, but the cracks are not significant enough that they'll just crack again, right. Or that the street's in such good condition that we're, just doing it too soon.
Right.
Gotcha. I believe that is all of them.
Okay. Very good. Well, I appreciate that information. Then I heard in one of our forums, candidate forums, someone had said that we should expect a street to last 20 years once it's constructed. We should expect, when a street is constructed, we should expect the construction company to guarantee a street for 20 years. Can you kind of speak to that?
I can. First of all, that actually, the idea of a street paving company sort of owning the street for its life, that is actually kind of new in the industry. There have been some agencies throughout the U.S. that have taken that on. Essentially, it's a partnership wherein you pay considerably more for the work, but ultimately the company guarantees the life, the design life of the pavement. In most cases, though, and I would say well over 90% of agencies are doing what we do, and that is we specify the construction. We go through a very stringent quality control process wherein we, to the best of our ability, assure that the street is constructed in conformance with the design plans, and we design a street that has at least a 20-year life. So we anticipate the street under normal conditions should be able to go 20 years. At about 15 to 18 years, you should start seeing some pretty good cracking in the street. At 20 years, you start to see the normal potholes. And then, as we've seen in the past in Grover Beach, I think possibly mostly because of our rather mild weather conditions, the streets could linger on in that condition for as much as 10 or 20 years beyond that. So, but, you know, certainly falling apart, developing potholes, cracking, rutting, things like that. So I don't think we can expect to go back on a contractor for the street, you know, maybe only going 18 years because they have no control over the environmental conditions and, you know, and other conditions in the street. But I think the process that we use is probably the most common, and I don't see many people embracing the other process.
But so then for the street to last that long, it requires this kind of maintenance.
Not necessarily. A street can go nearly 20 years with very little maintenance to it. And I say nearly, again, it will deteriorate to the point where 20 years is truly it, or somewhere thereabouts, I would say. You know, that's a national average, to be fair. But light maintenance can extend it out by as much as 50 years or even more. So you're essentially at $100,000 a block to rehabilitate a street. You know, if you only go 20 years, in 20 years, you're going to spend $100,000 on that block versus extending its life out another 30 years at pennies in comparison.
Also, to add to that, I think it also depends on the level of volume on the street. I know some of our local residential streets that have been recently rehabbed have a longer lifespan and can meet that parameter versus, say, Grand Avenue, which has thousands and thousands of car trips a day, and the rehab needs there are different than, say, South 8th Street or 7th Street or other residential streets. That's a factor as well when we look at that time frame.
Okay. All right. Well, that's very interesting. Okay. I think those are my questions at this point. Thank you.
Very good. Next, let's go to Councilmember Lance.
I don't have any additional questions at this point. Thank you.
Very good. Councilmember Shaw.
Yeah, thank you for the report. I think I just have a follow-up question to Councilmember Bright's question, because this is a comment I get sometimes, and I just want to be able to respond to it properly. Well, no one's fixed my street. It's really bad. But I've seen other streets maintained 2 and 3 times. So is it just we tell people, well, that's because those streets need that light maintenance to keep going. We understand your street has failed. But then some streets don't even need the light maintenance. Is that how do I respond to those people?
So I think what's interesting is to note that looking back 20 to 50 years, we have a pretty good record of street maintenance and repair projects. We have some old maps that show when streets were done. The files are long gone, but we do have the map stills with dates on them saying when we did these projects. And the funding was short in those days. And so a lot of these street reconstruction projects were taken on one block at a time. So you're seeing sort of the outcome of that, in that one block will be in pretty good shape and the next block right next to it will be in very poor shape. And so really, Councilmember Shaw, you were right on in your understanding of that. And that is that the streets throughout town vary from brand new to completely deteriorated. And per the council's direction, we're trying to get all those completely deteriorated streets addressed as quickly as possible, to the tune of $4 million a year at this point, which is pretty remarkable considering the town the size of Grover Beach. We're really putting a lot of money into our streets right now. But at the same time, you know, we do have streets that are in good condition. They need nothing, you know, that first 5 to 7 years. And then you're seeing streets that are 7 to 15 years old, where we are in fact doing the light maintenance to save the city immeasurable amounts of money and not having to completely replace that street by just letting it deteriorate to that 20-year point we were just talking about. So it is confusing. I get it. The public, it's difficult for the public to see that, especially when our streets have been done sort of one block at a time in the past. That's why the light maintenance project, in fact, looks like it does, because you're seeing sort of that block by block approach, because that's the condition of those blocks.
Yeah, and I might even suggest when we start the light maintenance project, maybe even sharing a social media post or something to say, okay, people with the failed streets, it's not, we haven't forgotten you. We're just trying to extend the lives of these streets. And what it sounds like is even when we're done with K-14 and we've rebuilt streets, people are still going to see us going back and doing this light maintenance. This doesn't mean that the streets were done improperly, right? It just means that's life with streets. Is that a proper summation of that?
It is. Streets dry out. Streets are flexible. They dry out. They're flexing all the time as traffic goes over them. So eventually, after they flex enough times, they crack. I mean, this is just the process for asphalt streets. There's no permanent asphalt street.
All right. Thank you.
Just to add to that point, in addition to these 23 street segments, we have 6 street projects of full rehabilitation, reconstruction, amounting to about 100 more blocks. So I think we definitely have a path forward towards substantial rehabilitation on top of this light maintenance work that will keep our investments at an appropriate level.
Thank you.
Very good. As a civil engineer, I love this conversation. So it warms my heart. So with that, if there's no other questions, we'll go ahead and open this up to the public and I have Mayor Pro Tem Bright. You had one more question.
I'm sorry, Jeff. I did have one other question. I wasn't sure if it was appropriate to go here, but I thought I should before I forget, because I'm old and I forget. There had been a couple of questions from the public about Nacimiento. And so I thought maybe I would just toss that out here, and then maybe we can talk about it somewhere in this conversation. And that was about maybe somewhere where we could possibly talk about repairing that, or I know that's going to need a full rehab, as I understand it. That's well beyond the light maintenance stage. But so if I could just throw that out there, so maybe we could get that into this conversation somewhere tonight.
Sure. Very good. So I think what I'll do is we do have some public commenters that do want to speak on this item, and perhaps after we conclude kind of the direction and the action on this, we can perhaps provide some additional discussion / direction to staff, because I've got some ideas as well that we might want to share and provide additional direction to staff for to come back at another date with some potential action. So, Councilmember Lance, did you have any questions as well?
It was more so in response to what Councilmember Shaw was discussing with Mr. Ray, in that I think also part of it, and correct me if I'm wrong, Mr. Ray, that we as a city also have a goal of doing, as you said in the history, it was one block at a time, just kind of very little by little, and we're trying to do longer segments. So maybe that means sometimes waiting a little bit longer for one part of the street so that we can do more than just one block at a time. I know I live on Nice, and I'm on the light maintenance repair list, but then a couple blocks over, oh my gosh, it's very, very, very bad. So, but I think, you know, there's some waiting so that we can have like a more consistent amount of blocks, like we did with Mentone, like we did with Newport, like we did with a lot of other streets. Is that that's kind of part of that whole calculation as well, right?
To some extent, yes. We're sort of timing the improvements to include as many blocks. I mean, you know, again, it is confusing to see the project skip over blocks. It's certainly confusing to people who live on that block in particular. So we're trying also to pair projects together where we may do complete reconstruction followed immediately by an overlay project, which is actually what we call a heavy maintenance project, as opposed to what we're talking about tonight, and then follow immediately behind with light maintenance. And what you end up with, hopefully, is the entire, you know, street, all of the blocks in that street are now in roughly the same condition. You can't do much about their underlying age, unfortunately, so there's still going to be varying speeds at which they deteriorate. You know, I think it, short of living in a brand new subdivision or a brand new town, I think this is just pretty much what you see out there.
Yeah, so to put it, it may seem inconsistent to the public eye, but it's actually to make it as consistent as possible.
Very well thought out. We try to make it as consistent as possible, and we're trying to pick up entire streets end to end in whatever method we can manage.
Got it. Thank you.
Okay, last call for questions before we go out to the public. Okay, not seeing any council members raise their hands. I will go ahead and remind people that if you do want to call in, the number is 805-321-6639, and I'll turn it over to our city clerk and see who we have on the line.
Yes, we have a Debbie, a Gary.
Good evening, Debbie. So your time starts now. Thank you for joining us.
Okay. Hi, Mayor and council people. I wrote a letter last week about my street, which is Nacimiento. And my questions now, it's terrible. I wish you guys would all drive all the way down the street, not just on the 12th, but all the way down, and the gutter on 12th and Nacimiento. That's terrible. We've had one neighbor already mess up the muffler on his bike, his motorcycle bike thing. But what I would like to know is, how do you pick which street? This street has not been done, how I understand it, in 50 years. And it's half sand. It's half sand with the gutter all broken up concrete. And my elderly neighbors that have the walkers, the two sisters cannot even walk across the street to visit each other, 90 and 92 years old. And they walk, but they can't with their walkers. So how do you come up with which streets you're going to pick? 50 years. Not light maintenance. You're right. The street is terrible. And, you know, is there something me and the neighbors have to do? Do we have to get petitions or what? What is it we do? How do you pick it? That's my question.
Very good. And we will go ahead and have staff address your questions after we have public comments as well. So, City Clerk, do we have anyone else on the line for public comment on this item?
No, we do not.
Okay, very good. Then we'll go ahead and close this to the public and bring it back to the council for further direct. Thank you, Debbie. Appreciate you being here. And if you hang on just one second, I'm sure staff will be able to address some of your questions. So I'll turn it over to our city manager or our city engineer who wants to address Ms. Aguera's comment. Mr. Ray.
I'd be happy to address both. First, let me highlight some work that actually is it was just awarded last week, I should say. So not about to be, but it is actually technically beginning, although you won't see work necessarily starting for a bit because it does take time for the contractor. But we have awarded a contract to replace the cross gutter at Nacimiento and North 12th, which is good news. And then, to the question, to the condition of Nacimiento, I can assure the caller that I drive it almost weekly. We do have a lift station at the end of the street. I check on a number of storm drains there. So, you know, I'm the guy that goes around and drives around and sees things and sees their condition and then ultimately provides direction to staff. How do you pick streets? That is the million-dollar question. And you know, it's a bit of science. It's a bit of wizardry. There's a lot of different opinions that go into how to do it. But I think this council has prudently started with the street pavement management system, which takes the condition of streets and tries to provide the most cost-effective path forward to getting the streets done. And then combine that with public input and interest in certain areas, as well as really the traffic counts on certain streets. You know, we've seen South 13th got done, 8th Street got done, 7th, North 13th, a number of streets, Mentone, Long Branch, Newport. These are some of the more heavily traveled local and residential streets that were, for that reason, are a high priority. So it's a bit of a balancing act. And ultimately, I know that council wants to have, as you've talked, Mr. Mayor, about possibly some more input on Nacimiento in particular. But the process is scientific and based on that and public input.
Let me interject there as well. Thank you for that explanation. So what aspect does the fact that street is in the floodplain and did have a development project, an active development project, the hotel project that was going to have some sewer lift station work? Typically, very similar to Ramona, we've basically delayed the resurfacing of Ramona while we had some development projects there. So can you also address what impacts the floodplain of the adjacent creek and some development projects adjacent to that street might have played into delay of construction on Nacimiento?
I can. First of all, with regard to the floodplain, that really hasn't had much impact on our decision making in terms of whether we move forward with Nacimiento or not. But I would say that because the street floods regularly, as well as there's high groundwater conditions from the hill just above, that's to the south of the street, this is a street where unfortunately the neighbors or the residents on that street and this council will likely see this street deteriorate faster than other streets. So that 20-year timeline under the perfect ideal conditions where you have well-drained subsurface soils and you're not regularly flooding the pavement, that doesn't exist on this street. It would be cost prohibitive to design a street that could survive over 20 years under those conditions, as it might even be impossible to design one that, or cost prohibitive to design one that would last 20. So this street will be a bit of a challenge for this city and this council going forward in the future. There are two waterline projects proposed for each of the two cul-de-sacs that are on that street. That has some impact. We've been delaying until we can get those waterline segments replaced before we do pave, because we would certainly pave the cul-de-sacs at the same time. And then we are sort of waiting to understand the full impacts of the hotel development, which do include some culvert work and, as you mentioned, some sewer work that could, in fact, impact this area.
Okay. I definitely appreciate that explanation. So I know it's not specifically on the agenda for this evening. So, but I do appreciate the opportunity to address Debbie's concerns, and perhaps we'll have a moment to further have a discussion about that. But let's bring it back to the citywide street repair light maintenance project for just a second, and make sure that if there's any concerns or questions with regards to the action in front of us this evening. So does anybody have any additional comments that they want to make, or if you're ready for a motion? So we'll start with Councilmember Shaw.
No, I don't have comments on this item. I'm happy with it. I understand why we need to do it. I do think maybe the further discussion will be further. So, yes.
Okay, very good. Councilmember Lance.
I also am fine with this agenda item and moving forward with the light maintenance that suggested streets for staff's recommendation. But yes, I think it would be prudent for us to discuss agendizing a discussion about Nacimiento and just the surrounding area. I think, we have these discussions regularly about the next kind of set of streets and how they kind of all go together because of the water and because of other utilities. And there's a lot of moving pieces when it comes to redoing a street, as Mr. Gray has informed us many times. So, yeah, let's talk about that at some point.
Very good. Mayor Pro Tem Bright.
Well, I agree with my colleagues, and Mr. Ray has assured me that these are pretty much the streets in our city that are ready to go and are appropriate for this kind of work at this time. So I'm comfortable with going forward with this, and I do agree that I would like to see further discussion regarding Nacimiento and the surrounding streets come back to us at a later time. So I agree.
Very good. So, and I agree with that as well. So let's see if there is someone ready to make a motion. So I guess before we do that, let's we do have a recommendation on to receive information on the proposed light maintenance. And I guess the direction would be to accept the list and then authorize staff to go out to bid on the time frame as applicable to your design for these components. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Very good. So if everyone is okay with that, we'll make that the motion that the streets on the list are provided as good direction for staff. Do you prefer a upper limit of that approximately $500,000, or would you like some flexibility with regards to, since we don't know quite yet what material costs are going to be? So is there a concern by staff that we may be exceeding some budgetary desires in order to complete other projects?
I wouldn't say so, no. I think within the range of $500,000 is where we're aiming for, and I think if it's a bit over, certainly this is such a cost-effective way of extending the life of streets. We should be, keeping the project as whole as we can. So okay. I would say if we have authorization to maybe, as much as 15% over, that would be great.
And maybe the question becomes, this is coming back to the council for award, correct?
It will be, with a contingency and other items added in.
Okay, very good. Then I'll go ahead and make a motion that we accept the proposed light maintenance street repair project and authorized staff to go out to bid for these 23 streets. And we'll look forward to seeing it come back on a future agenda item for award.
Thank you.
I'll second that.
We have a motion and a second. Any other discussion? Seeing no hands raised, City Clerk, if you would roll call, please.
Was that second by the Mayor Pro Tem?
Yes, it was.
Okay. Mayor Lee?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Bright?
Yes.
Councilmember Lance?
Yes.
Councilmember Shaw?
Yes.
Very good. So we have a light maintenance project that is ready to go on staff's timing. So I think before we proceed to the next item, it sounds like we've got some discussion on NACI that we'd like to have. And I think I'd like to open up the discussion a little bit larger or a little bit wider if council and staff are willing to kind of listen to a conjecture on my part. Staff, Greg, I don't know, do you have the completed in progress and future projects map that you could bring up? And I apologize, I should have asked you to have it available.
I anticipated that, so and thank you for assisting us with that anticipation a bit. I believe Wendy has it ready to bring up in full scale so we can see it better.
Very good, thank you.
It should be attachment 2, I believe. Mm-hmm.
And as our city clerk is bringing up that attachment, my thought process as we were going through and reviewing staff reports and so forth, and you'll notice, and Wendy, if you could bring up the attachment number 2, if you could, please. And I think where my anticipation is going to bring us. Thank you. And is it possible to zoom in on kind of the northern part of the city just a little bit? we can see that we've proceeded and completed a number of projects, and we have a number of projects still underway. There's in this area, we've got Nacimiento, which has the two cul-de-sacs directly adjacent to it. But in this kind of the northern part of the area, we've got Margarita, Angela Terrace, Charles Avenue, and Ocean View, and Ritchie Road, which I think Ritchie Court is on the light maintenance program that we just approved. But I think that it may be beneficial to ask staff to review each of the streets in the northern part here and say, let's create a project at our next opportunity that includes all of the streets remaining north of Atlantic City and east of 4th Street as a project, so that we're not focusing specifically on one street, but kind of, as we've done in the past, provided a direction to staff to do a series of streets that that focuses on an area. So I think that's where my thought originally went to, realizing that Nacimiento is a high priority in that grouping. But let's see if there's any discussion that other members of the council want to have. So I'll start with Mayor Pro Tem Bright.
Thank you. I think that makes a lot of sense. Now, however, that would not include the Marbrissa track.
Correct. Right? It would not include Marbrissa nor the San Diego Loop track. Both of those are private streets.
Correct. So I think that makes a great deal of sense, and that would be at least one sector of our community that would be complete. I like that idea.
Okay. Council Member Shaw.
I think it's a good idea. I'm not sure what kind of maintenance is needed on Margarita, so I guess I would just, and that's what we can maybe discuss, that is the staff up to that? Do they think that's too big of a chunk or whatever? I think it sounds like Nacimiento needs so much work, it could almost be its own thing if needed. But I do want to reiterate, as many have said, that they've been to Nacimiento. I've been to Nacimiento as well, taken pictures of the broken gutter to start this process quite some time ago. And I've also been there when it's been raining. So I absolutely relate to the residents' frustrations. So I'm good with the package as proposed, but if it's too much, I would rather just focus on Nacimiento.
Very good. So let's see if Councilmember Lance, if you have any comments.
I would say my comments are in line with Councilmember Shaw's. If it makes sense to do all of that section together for consistency and efficiency, then great. But if it's going to take away from prioritizing Nacimiento, then I would agree with Councilmember Shaw.
Okay, very good. Let's turn it over to staff real briefly to see if the direction or the input that we provided is helpful, or if you need some further clarification or other input that you'd like to provide. So we'll start with Mr. Ray.
Well, being the civil engineer now who's listening, I would say that what I heard through my civil engineering ears was that if we can identify a number of streets in the area north of Atlantic and east of North 4th Street that would be in similar condition to Nacimiento or close enough that full rehab would be appropriate, we would include those in a single project. To the extent that the project doesn't grow so large that we can't, do it in a single sitting. Does that sound about right?
And if I can just add to Mr. Ray's comments, we definitely hear the council loud and clear about the interest in looking at this. I think we as staff would like to take this back and be able to provide information back to the council of what this project could look like. We're not in the position this evening necessarily to develop a new project on this agenda item, but we hear the council interest and direction to look at this. And I think what staff would do is to bring this back to the council with the parameters identified, again, east of 4th Street, north of Atlantic City, and publicly maintained streets, and then bring that potential package back to the council at a later meeting, and then the council at that time could decide to go forward with that grouping as a project or to narrow down to a subset based on your direction. Because part of our work will also be the costs and to see how much this group of streets would cost in its totality. And then the council will have to weigh that allocation versus what the need was. So I think what we do is again, bring back information to you to then create a project at a later date. From a time frame standpoint, given that we are rapidly completing the calendar year, our proposal would be to come back to the council in January with this item as part of a normally scheduled street repair discussion to update the council and get your direction on where we are at that point. So that's what staff would propose to the council and making sure we have the time and space to do this analysis thoughtfully and bring back that information to you to create a project.
Very good. I appreciate the clarification by the city manager and the information by our city engineer. And I'm good with that approach. Let's see and make sure that other council members are good with that approach as well. So we'll go with Councilmember Lance.
I am supportive of that approach, yes. Thank you.
Very good. Councilmember Shaw.
Yes, I am good with that approach. I know we're talking about a lot tonight that's unknown. I mean, can we give people any estimation of time? Just an estimate.
And I think before staff replies to that, I think I'll just kind of jump in and say, if we did create a new project, we have kind of programmed, I think it's four or five projects or programs kind of in anticipation of that, which I think is one of the attachments in our staff reports. So I think at the January meeting, we would need to then prioritize for staff which we wanted to, if we wanted to identify this potential project as going first. Is that a fair statement, City Manager?
Yes, of the six projects that are currently selected, two are in progress, and then the other four are identified in an order that council identified back in July. So absent any changes by the council, that would be the priority order, and this, if it was a project, would be at the bottom of that list. We'll defer to the council if you wish to make that change, should you create a project during that January meeting.
Okay. So Mayor Pro Tem Bright, any additional discussion?
No, actually, that's kind of what I thought we would do anyway. You would bring this information to us, and then we would decide how we'd want to go forward. So, so yes, it sounds good to me. I look forward to it.
Very good. So it sounds like we have consensus on that. Any further direction to staff that you would request? No. Okay. Very good. Then it sounds like we do have the concrete gutter work in progress. Whether construction starts tomorrow or very soon thereafter will depend upon the timing of the contractor. Mm-hmm. But unless there's any other further discussion on this item, we can go ahead and move into our next agenda item, which is the draft Ramona Garden Master Plan CIP 1258. And let's just make sure that, does anybody need a break? I think we are good to proceed. So we'll work on Ms. Wigan on for the work on the light maintenance project. Mr. Bronson on the Ramona Garden Master Plan. As way of introduction.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Mayor and council members. Our next item is an exciting item for us this evening. This is the culmination of a year-long planning process into reimagining our premier public space in the heart of the city. That's Ramona Garden Park. I want to commend our team who has been working diligently to bring this together for this evening, our project manager, capital project manager, Aaron Wiggin, and Park and Recreation Director, Kathy Petker, along with our colleagues at RRM Design who are joining us in their conference room. Thank you, team, for joining us this evening. We're looking forward to the council's review and input and direction tonight on helping us finalize the master plan and set forth this vision for our premier space, again, in the heart of the community. We've done a lot of public outreach and gone to the Parks, Recreation, Beautification Commission, and tonight we bring it forward to the City Council for your review this evening. And with that, I'll turn it over to Ms. Wiggin to take it from here.
Thank you for the introduction.
And before Ms. Wiggin...
Sorry.
And before Ms. Wiggin does her introduction, I apologize. I just do want to remind members of the public that if you do want to make a public item, please call in at area code 805-321-6639. And I apologize for the interruption.
No, thank you. Thanks for the introduction here. Again, my name is Erin Wiggin. I'm the CIP project manager. Just to give a little bit of background here on the park, you know, it is a multi-use park that includes the Ramona Garden Park Center, exterior restrooms, an open plaza area, and a dance floor, and a large open turf area. And the park is a focal point for a lot of activities in Grover Beach and in the Five Cities area. One of the most popular activities, obviously, being the summer concert series. So it's centrally located to the Grand Avenue businesses and retail shops and restaurants. So the potential to really create a downtown feel is really there with this park. And over the years, the city's, you know, considered different improvements like adding a playground, removing the water feature, and upgrading the amphitheater to enhance those concert series. Even back in 2005, the city developed a Ramona-specific plan, which was kind of more of a general plan for the area and infrastructure surrounding the park, but not necessarily for the park itself. You know, the addition of a playground has been talked about more recently in the last few years, but the direction was to first address any deferred maintenance at the Ramona Garden Park Center and then add exterior lighting at the park. So those items were completed last year. And then council, as you know, you provided direction to proceed with a master plan. And really the intent of the master plan is to provide the city with a roadmap for enhancing the park and constructing these improvements. And so it's really a guide for the city to use to implement these improvements as funding becomes available. So it's important to remember that this is a concept and a high level concept. It's not a design yet. So that way the next steps would be to proceed with designs of different phases as we secure funding. Over the last year, as the city manager indicated, the city's worked with RRM Design Group to develop this master plan. And they'll go into it further, but we really spent a lot of time with doing some public outreach and really got a lot of public input here. And last month, staff and RRM presented to the Parks and Recreation Beautification Commission, and they were really impressed with RRM's work and the draft plan that we're about to present to you. So again, as Matt indicated, we're looking for your input on the draft master plan and also input on recognition ideas for donors and the Clark family in particular. So with that, I'll turn it over to RRM, led by Melanie Mills, Jeff Ferber, and Anna Schmitz.
Great. Thank you, Erin. Can you hear us? Terrific. Good evening, council members, Mayor Lee. We're very excited to be here tonight and to share with you the Ramona Park Master Plan. I'm going to share my screen and it'll take just a couple steps here. I'm gonna turn off our video and share the screen and then we'll go forward with the presentation. Okay, that's the one right there. Terrific. Can you see our screen?
Yep.
Okay, super. All right, we're going to go through a pretty quick project overview just to orient everyone. We felt it was important to talk about the initial objectives that we developed with the city team that have been guiding us throughout this process. Probably one of the most important is the need to engage the community in this planning process to shape the park's future. And also to recognize that we're developing a long-term vision that will be implemented over time as funding is available. The park needs to be a good neighbor, and it needs to be a resource and an amenity to the surrounding neighbors and residents in the area. We also wanted to make sure that we were improving connections between the park and other uses like the community center, the library, and the downtown exploration station. And we wanted to activate the park throughout the year, throughout the week, throughout the day, with different amenities that would serve visitors from the community of all ages and abilities. Adding a play area is critical, and making sure that the park would work with the established popular community events was a major priority. So this is just an overview of the master planning process. We started with community outreach. We moved into the development of alternative concepts and then blended those into a final master plan that we'll be looking at tonight. So the next steps for the master plan will be to take any input that we receive tonight from you and from the city staff and to develop a final master plan that the city will then use to seek future funding of the park improvements. Overview of the timeline. The first community outreach occurred in December at the Holiday Fair. A workshop took place in February on the 19th. That was good timing because we were able to meet in person with people in the community before COVID hit. After that, you know, a lot of things have really changed in terms of community outreach. In the spring, we developed the conceptual design alternative. Over the summer, we merged those into this draft master plan. On the 17th, we presented this to the city's Parks, Recreation, and Beautification Commission. And here we are tonight, presenting to City Council. And then our next step will be to present the final master plan once again to City Council in November. I'm sure everyone's very familiar with the site. We have the yellow dash line showing the outline of the existing park. To the west is North 9th Street, to the east 10th Street, and up above is Brighton Avenue to the north and Ramona Avenue along the southern border. You'll see a yellow shaded box, and that is a potential future donation of a parcel by the Clark family that would be added into the park. We also wanted to just note some direction that was provided to us by the city that has also guided the design, the development of the master plan. And that is the importance of the community center and retaining that building, removing the existing water feature that has quite a bit of maintenance issues and aesthetics, improving access throughout the park. Many of the existing walkways are not ADA accessible for people of all abilities, making sure that there is a stage and a dance floor that's part of the master plan. We were also asked to provide an option that showed the Ramona Avenue bus queuing being taken to another site in town. And lastly, the other existing structures and improvements were really up for us to consider whether or not they fit or maybe did not fit in a future master plan. Some images of Ramona Garden Park today, big expansive lawn area. Some of the other hardscape and other features that are there, some existing large trees, the park in its fully activated state during summer concerts with food trucks. We'd like to just touch on the community engagement that took place. Here we are at the holiday fair on the 21st of December. Really good turnout. We lined up all of our information at the top of the line for the snow slide, and we're able to capture 77 surveys. Some of the top responses were that people really wanted the park to feel fun and safe. The top things people wanted to change were the lack of a play area and concerns over the transient and drug use in the park. And most valued aspects of the park today were concerts, events, and the large grass area and open space. The city also carried out an online survey, and some of the top responses they received were concern over the use by transient individuals and feeling safe in the park, a desire for a playground, maintaining the open grass space, and providing a music venue. These are images from the community workshop in February and some of the activities that took place. A summary of some of the top responses we received in answering the question, what does the park need? An amphitheater, permanent stage, community art, and what should be in the playground, net climbing, slides, a treehouse, water play, nautical theme play, and accessibility for all. So out of all this public outreach, we're developed the alternative concepts. We start first using these bubble diagrams that help us to understand space and movement circulation throughout the park. Those are then developed further into concept alternatives. And you can see here the concept one and concept two. And they have a lot in common. Most of the main elements are in both of these concepts. So you will see the priority elements like the central plaza, the stage, the concert lawn, a playground, but then there's modified circulation and design layout that happens as we move into the alternatives. In alternative one, some of the main elements that are different between the two are that we have at number two, a sculpture garden and an urban orchard. At four and five, the city's parking lot at the library is transitioned into a courtyard entrance. And then the donated Clark parcel at five becomes a multi-purpose parking plaza. And at eight is a new restroom is shown. And at six, you can see the event lawn size is a little smaller than what you would see on alternative two. At alternative two, the major differences are a more pronounced entrance at Ramona Avenue and North 9th Street at that corner. And as I mentioned previously, a little larger lawn area at seven. Number one, the central plaza area is enlarged and more pronounced on this alternative. At number three, there is an outdoor game area. And at four and five, up near the library, the existing city parking lot at number four is enhanced to become a multi-purpose parking plaza, and the Clark parcel becomes an outdoor classroom. Number nine, the restrooms shift closer to the play area. Here we go, in the draft master plan. I'm going to focus in on these a little bit more in future slides, so I'm just going to touch on the main elements that are and show you those locations in the combined draft master plan. So at one is that new entrance with the commemorative entry plaza. At we have ADA paths, number two, throughout the site for circulation. At number three is the multi-use plaza and also a two-sided stage and dance floor. Four is rentable event space and an outdoor seating. Five is an outdoor game area. Six is the library parking plaza at the library. Seven, an outdoor classroom. Eight becomes programmable fitness. Nine is the amphitheater and event lawn. 10 is a playground located up on the slope with a hills to sea theme. 11 is restroom and storage, and there's additional restroom and storage off of the community center. I'm going to focus in on each one of these elements. The entry plaza and game area. The new entry plaza forms a stronger visual connection to the downtown and also a formal place for pedestrians to move off of the sidewalk, and also an opportunity to relocate the existing Veterans Memorial. To the right of the entry plaza as you enter is the outdoor game area that can include durable outdoor versions of games like bag toss and ping pong tables. The multi-use plaza and rentable event space is located between the community center and the event stage, and it's designed to accommodate a variety of activities. It's an outdoor extension of the existing Ramona Center building, and it can be used during the big events and concerts. It can also be used for community meetings, outdoor classes, or it could be rented out for events. During the big events, too, the food trucks could park along the Ramona frontage, and the different areas of the plaza could be used for outdoor dining, a beer garden, special seating for seniors. And so it really has a lot of potential uses. The stage and the amphitheater and the event lawn. The stage and amphitheater are centerpieces of the new park design. One of the really cool features is the two-sided stage that allows for viewing of performances and access to the back of the stage. So you could have people dancing in the plaza behind. You could have some folks dancing at the bottom of the amphitheater. If you had a smaller program, you could view it from the plaza side rather than the amphitheater side. So there's a lot of flexibility there. The event lawn will accommodate numbers that attend the concert series now, and it could also be a fun venue for movie nights and other performances. The fitness area and the outdoor classroom is an area where we're really focused on programming. And we feel that one way to help the park feel safer is to activate it throughout the day and the week. And the fitness area and the outdoor classroom and these flexible parking areas, they provide opportunities for doing that. The outdoor classroom could be used for learning, but it also serves as a flexible space during events. You could have food trucks there. You could have a farmer's market. The fitness area with the different exercise stations and the open space can also be used by individuals or by classes. And here, focusing on the play area up at the top of the park, the concept is really inspired by the existing mature oaks that are in the park, and it reflects how in Grover and the Central Coast, the grassy oak hillsides drop down towards the coast. And so here in the park, there are play mounds with slides and colorful surfacing and a log structure that looks kind of like a coastal pier. There are also multiple spinners and climbers, and the play area would be designed to accommodate inclusive play so that there are accessible routes and that the play equipment is also accessible. And one of the things that we really like about it is the location up on the hill, where we feel like during events, parents can be watching their children or children can be playing and still be enjoying the concert down below. So I want to zoom out and touch on a few of the additional points of the draft master plan. At 11, there are two proposed restrooms, and one is located near the playground and the other is an extension of the community center building. And locating them in this way makes them more visible. We know that the restroom has been problematic from a maintenance and safety perspective, and so that was the thinking behind these locations. Also, the fitness area near number two has benches under the mature oaks and DG surface, and this area can provide additional spillover space for people with chairs during the concert events. And lastly, near number two, you'll see that there are some fitness area, those little round circles. Those are fitness area stops, and they're part of a larger loop for folks exercising or walking their dogs. Lastly, we wanted to talk a little bit about the memorials and recognition in the park. There are existing memorials that are located across the park that would likely be disturbed during redesign and construction and park improvements. And so we had an idea that we'd like to create a new feature that would be designed to recognize all of those memorials together in one place. And there are a variety of ways you could do this. There's seat walls, mosaics, metal letters that could be set into the pavement. Also, just the need to relocate the Veterans Memorial. And as we mentioned previously, at the entrance to the park is a nice location where you could highlight the sacrifices made by veterans. And there are some different ways we could do that through a retaining wall, like the example shown here, or perhaps through a memorial row of trees. And as we've mentioned, the Clarks have been patrons of the arts and generous supporters in the community for decades, including their donations of land at Ramona Garden Park, and recognizing their commitment to the city and to children and the arts is something that we feel could be woven into the park improvements through elements like colorful signs and mosaics and etchings in the concrete surfaces. These are just some examples of how we could do this. Also, there might be opportunities for fundraising where future donors could be recognized in something like a seat wall or a plaza that's set with bricks. And last slide, just showing where some of these types of memorials and recognition could occur in the park. So the green dots indicating the entrance for possible Veterans Memorial or a memorial grove of trees, the blue dots being the potential donor recognition where names could be in seat walls or in the plaza paving, or even in the amphitheater seating. And lastly, the red dots showing places where we could recognize the Clark family's contributions in the outdoor classroom, or a quote in the concrete, or some sort of signage or mosaics in the park, in the playground. And that's it.
Very good. Thank you, Melody. That was an amazing presentation. I appreciate the opportunity to get a walk through the process and a walk through the concept that's in front of us here tonight. So let's see first if members of the council have any questions or specific questions that they might have. And as we're doing that, I'll just remind folks that are listening in, if you do want to call in at 805-321-6639, there will be an opportunity for public comment in just a couple minutes. So let's start with Councilmember Shaw.
Thank you, and thank you for the presentation. It's all really coming together. I have a general just question about the process, because I was asking the city manager some questions today, and I think, for example, this is just our general plan. Does that mean, okay, when we're ready to go work and look at the playground, then we'll talk more specifically about what's going to be in the playground? And like when we're ready to go to the exercise area, then we'll talk more specifically. Like, are we just at the point in the process where we're naming areas, but each area will be worked out specifically later?
Sure. Would you like me to answer that, Mayor Lee?
Yeah.
Oh. Sure. Okay. Yeah. So that's exactly it. We have a very high level cost estimate for different phases here. And now with this roadmap, once we identify exactly where things are going, yes, we would move into the phase. For example, the playground. We would go out for design for that playground. So again, this is just high level. Specific details for different elements would get worked out during a design.
Okay, and I just want to make sure I'm understanding the diagram correctly, because when I was reading it this morning, I didn't realize until you showed me your photos, area number 7, that's the outdoor classroom. So that area right now is a house. So number 8, where it's the exercise area, that is open space right now, or is that also part of the area that's the house?
Erin, would you like me to answer that?
Yes, yeah, thank you.
This is Melanie. The area that is the programmable fitness is within the current park boundary.
Okay.
All right. Thank you. So, yeah, I'm just trying to think about what may happen sooner and what may happen later. So I'm just trying to, then my other question is on area number 6, the library parking lot. I sit on the board of the library, so I know a lot about, our hours. We're only open in afternoons, like at 1:00, but it would be great to have the space active like all day and on the weekends and stuff like that. Would it be possible in that area number 6 to create enough electrical outlets or whatever was needed to maybe offer that to food trucks or vendors or something like that? Like, could it be a multi-use space like that?
This is Melanie. Definitely that area could be a multi-use space. And I think what makes it that is by changing it from an asphalt parking lot into some pavers that have a little bit more of a pedestrian scale. It would still work well for parking, but it would be a more inviting space. It also provides another form of circulation and entrance, really, because you change it from walking through a asphalt parking lot to coming through that enhanced paved area. And okay. you could do all sorts of things in there.
That's great. I think I just had one more question about area number 1, the entry plaza. I really like that idea. It looks really pretty. The one thing I'm a little worried about is, the number one concern of residents is just the current use of that area. Does happen to be a lot of people napping, maybe people who are homeless or different things. And it seems like in area 1, that lawn there that remains preserved is a prime area where we're just trying to switch the use, if you will. So I'm just a little bit concerned about making a beautiful memorial yet having people just kind of napping all around it. So I don't know what your thoughts are on that or if there are possibilities there.
Sure. That area, you are correct. It really is just shown as it exists currently today in the master plan. It wasn't identified for a changed enhancement or a new activity or element there. But the landscape could certainly be renovated in that area without too much, too large of a construction project, really, to replace the current lawn area with more of a drought-tolerant ground cover area that would be attractive and have lower, water use and wouldn't be the kind of place that you would have, really be hanging out and lying down or napping.
All right, and I think that those were all my questions for now. I may have some later, but thank you.
Very good. And before we go to our next council member, I did want to just see if Director Petker wanted to add anything to in response to Councilmember Shaw's comments.
Not at this time, thank you.
Okay, very good. So the next we'll go to Councilmember Lance.
Thank you, Mayor Lee. Just a few questions. First off, thank you for the presentation. It gets me very excited to see all of this. I'm at Parks a lot with my three-year-old, so I love this idea. Growing up in Paso, where the park is such a central focus of everything around the city, I think that Romano really has a great location for it to be that epicenter of activity. A few questions. We talked about potentially moving transit, the buses. I work across the street from the park. My office is there, so I see what's going on Romano all the time. And just the buses there, obviously we need a place for them to go and for that transition to happen. And we had talked about moving them to the Grover Beach Transit Center off of PCH that we just built out. But I know this is such a small thing. I still see buses in some of the graphics here. So I'm just wondering kind of why that is, or if there has been any kind of movement from that positioning, and then I can ask my other questions if you want to answer them as I go, or if you want me to ask them all at once, but I may talk too much, so I don't know.
And actually, Councilmember Lance, I can jump in on that question. As I've been in touch with RTA about that possibility, and I believe RTA is open to that, and we are talking to them about potential options for where those buses could be located, whether it's the transit center, train station, or some other site. So we are discussing that, and I believe we'll be able to get to a reasonable solution for that.
Okay. Maybe just for future, I don't know, but just the buses on the graphic. I know it seems like such a silly thing, but I know we've gotten some questions about that because there are buses on the graphic. So maybe just making that clear in some way, shape, or form for the public. My other question was about the restroom location. I know that it was moved for reasons stated by Melanie in her presentation. I also know that that's a significant cost. So I'm just wondering if it is as significant of a cost as I think it is. Maybe the pros outweigh the cons of that. I really like having a bathroom closer to the play area. I think that makes sense when I take my kid to the park. I like being closer to the bathroom. For his sake, but were there any comments maybe in response to that and any analysis that was done in weighing the costs of moving the entire bathroom from one part of the park to another?
So Mayor Lee, if you'd like, I could go ahead and answer that a little bit. Again, part of the restroom location as identified in the master plan was again to obviously put a restroom near the playground and also to help increase the visibility. Right now where the restroom is currently located, there's a lot of things that go on that would likely be prohibited if, you know, it was closer to the street and there was more visibility with it. As far as costs, you know, there is a cost increase to it wouldn't be relocating the restrooms. It would be demoing the existing restrooms and then adding new. So there would be some cost savings, roughly about $200,000 if you didn't have to do the restrooms. But as you can see, if you look at the draft master plan that Melanie's put up, the existing restroom location as it is really hinders the connectivity that RRM has designed for the park, and with this really nice plaza that we don't have anywhere else in the city, that existing restroom location is not in an ideal place.
Okay, thank you. And then my last question was, and I think
City Manager Brunson is probably going to laugh when I ask this because I bring it up all the time. Water play, I know that that was something brought up by the community. It's a personal thing as well for me. What I know it was kind of taken into consideration with the park. Is it kind of in the back of our heads for the park playground area? And what, if so, would that water play look like?
So again, Mary Lee, I'll go ahead and answer that. And Melanie with RRN might be able to help too. There was a water play element proposed at one of the alternatives. Given where we are with the current situations with drought and things like that, we didn't feel it was necessarily appropriate to have a large splash pad or plaza. So at this time, the draft final plan that you've seen does not include a splash pad or water play, but we could look at putting it back in there.
Okay, thank you for that. That's all my questions at this time.
Very good, thank you for those. Next we'll go to Mayor Pro Tem Bright.
Thank you. So just to kind of go back to the restrooms for a minute, if you wouldn't mind. I do personally believe that you need to have restrooms near the playground. Kids are little, they have to go a lot, so I think it's a good idea. But can you just describe the restrooms to me as they are proposed right now? Are they going to be like one, two? Do we have an idea yet? Is there a concept for them?
Sure. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Oh, great. This is Melanie. And the way that they are currently proposed, and this is partially in response to what we have heard about the maintenance issues and some of the pretty bad vandalism that has taken place in the existing restrooms, and also based on our experience at RRM using a certain type of prefabricated restrooms that are designed to have very, very little maintenance, have very low maintenance through special systems. So at the restroom that is located closest to the playground, that is proposed as a freestanding Exilu style restroom. And I apologize, I don't think I have a photograph of one of those in the slideshow. But they're really these cute little prefabricated restrooms. They can actually be decorated on the outsides to fit into all sorts of settings and have art on them. So from a neighbor perspective, you know, looking over at it, it could be a really cute little system. They also have special systems to for washing them and for doing things like throwing away they have like a diaper chute and it's all integrated into enclosed systems that make the maintenance easier for staff and that really reduce opportunities for vandalism. They're just very tough little restrooms.
So are they
also not like sorry?
Would it be like one stall, or would it be a boy and a girl? Would it be a unisex? Do we know yet?
They offer a variety of options, and okay. You can have a single family restroom. You could have two. You could have three. You can have an ADA special access restroom. So there are a variety of choices that are obviously related to cost as well.
Okay, so this is something that we would determine once we get to that point.
Yes. The other restroom that was requested by city staff was to propose an extension from the community center that would offer a men's and women's on the exterior of the building that I think could probably be locked, and it's also associated with
some storage facilities that are needed for operations at the park. And so that will be obviously next to the community center, so probably open during the day and locked at night.
Okay. And now could you tell me the name of the freestanding restroom again?
Sure. It's Exilu, E X E L O O.
L O O. Thank you. Okay, very good. So then my other question, well, the transit has been answered. Oh, regarding the turf. So I understand that there's going to be some kind of like an AstroTurf, or can you tell me where we would have that type of surface that would not be like a real grass area, or that Certainly. Where that's proposed?
Yes. So the artificial turf is only proposed in the play area on mounds and sloped surfaces that are intended for play.
Okay.
And the reason being that the repetitive motions and tracking over those areas and sliding on them, it would cause too much of an impact on a natural lawn slope.
Sure, absolutely, I understand that. And so that sort of thing, I had read a public comment where there was concern about dog urine and so on and so on. So I know that, I mean, obviously they've been playing football and baseball or whatever on AstroTurf or artificial turf for years. So there must be ways to clean and sanitize artificial turf.
Yes, it can be maintained okay. and washed.
Great. Okay, very good. Let's see. Once we get to the playground areas and all like that, the specific features will be discussed at that time. So I guess I don't need to talk about those. And the recognitions, I guess we'll talk about that too when we get to those areas. So I guess my questions have been answered. Thank you. Presentation was great. Thank you very much.
Very good. So I do have just one or two quick questions. So Melanie, if you could bring back the kind of the overall plan for just a moment. Great. Thank you. I appreciate that. So from a, obviously the one of the largest activated activities in the park is our summer concert series, but then also Stone Soup. And so what was the discussion during the crafting of the master plan with respect to connectivity between the main stage of Stone Soup, which would be to the kind of the upper left of the one in the master plan area, and then the amphitheater? So is there still enough separation to be able to have both stages operating, maybe not at the same time, but kind of doing what we do now is have the booths and so forth utilizing the street, and then still being able to have a full experience of Stone Soup?
Yes, we did take the Stone Soup event into account during the planning, and our we believe there would be, you know, the same amount of space, so the space would be sufficient between the stages. But one thing that the master plan does is really creates this frontage along Ramona Avenue that is much more of an entrance and a connection to Ramona Avenue. You also have these little rooms and activity spaces around 4 and 5 that would be kind of nice transition points between the different zones during Stone Soup. And then nice circulation along that main walkway from the corner entrance into the amphitheater lawn zone. So we did consider it and
very good. Thank you. I appreciate that. Great. I appreciate that. And I did have a conversation with a gentleman over the weekend who him and his wife did go down during what would have been the Stone Soup weekend and decided to dance in the intersection just because they missed Stone Soup. So they just decided to recreate their own Stone Soup for just a moment. And I guess staying in that same area, realizing that the specific plan for Ramona and the connectivity between the community center and the E-Station to the, I guess that would be the west in this picture. So this master plan doesn't preclude us from doing expansions beyond the footprint of this as well. I mean, we still have opportunities to be able to work with that specific plan, perhaps drawing together the Ramona Park and the E-Station concepts together so that it really does become a cohesive opportunity. So is that nothing precluding that, correct?
Correct.
Okay, very good. So, and I know one of the items that Councilmember Shaw has brought up on occasion, and we've had a UA-20 discussion about underground power lines. So has the, and this is probably a question for Aaron, Ms. Wiggin, does the concept cost, does that include undergrounding the utility lines that go through the park, or would it would we need to include that as a future cost item as well?
No, this current cost is not included. So we'd have to look at that as a future cost.
Okay, very good. Appreciate that. And so I think the only other question I have is kind of, I love the aspirational opportunities for this. In the final plan, is there going to be a discussion of potential phasing? And perhaps if one... Let's say the playground in the northern part, that should be phase one in order to not hopscotch around the program. Is that going to be part of the final master plan discussion?
We will definitely, we can provide the master plan with phasing as directed by staff, certainly.
Okay, definitely. I appreciate that. Just that opportunities for kind of a professional thought as to which should come first, the chicken or the plate, from that perspective. So I think those are the only questions that I have at the moment. Before we go up to the public, I do want to remind folks that if they call in at area code 805-321-6639, then we will give you an opportunity to speak on this item momentarily. But I did want to recognize our Parks and Rec Commissioner, Jeff Almashot. I'm not sure if he is still here, but I did want to give him an opportunity to speak on the master plan and the discussion that occurred at the Parks and Rec committee, if he wanted to take a moment.
Thank you, Mayor Lee. I am still here. We had this presented to us about a month ago, and we're very excited about it. We see it as just a wonderful thing for the community. I think that all of the Parks and Rec commissioners were very on board with all of the ideas and look forward to supporting this however we can.
Very good. I appreciate that. And let's see if any council members have any specific questions for Jeff as the Parks and Rec representative this evening's council member Shaw. Any specific questions or comments for Mr. Almashot?
I don't think I have specific questions. I just want to confirm. So it's my understanding that your group pretty much affirmed this plan. They were good with this plan. Is that right?
Very much so, yes.
Okay. All right. That was my only question. Thank you.
Very good. Councilmember Lance.
No specific questions. Just thank you for the feedback, and we appreciate having the multi-levels of review and feedback. I think we're excited about it, too, so thanks.
Very good. Mayor Pro Tem Bright.
No, I can't think of any other than just to thank you.
for taking the time to do that and to be here tonight.
Well, thank you for having me.
Very good. Yeah, Jeff, thank you very much for being here this evening and providing the feedback. And so with that, unless there's any other comments that you wanted to make, Mr. Almashot, we will say thank you, and you can see if there's any other members of the public on the line that want to comment this evening. City Clerk.
No, we have no one on the line.
Very good. Thank you. Then I will go ahead and close this to the public, bring it back to the council for further discussion and direction. So let's see. We've had some good discussion. We had a great presentation on a very aspirational plan, and I think that's one of the main goals that we had in starting this process, is that we wanted to remake a very active park and make it an even more activer park, if that's such a word, in a fashion that provides the opportunities that the community is looking for. Concerts, for car shows with Grover Beach United, a Oktoberfest that comes in each year, and any number of events, either public and private. And so I want to thank RRM for the outreach, and thank staff for the opportunity to bring this forward and really to show us what can be done with this amazing jewel that we have in our community, and see if who has conversations about some of the specific items or any further direction that we want to add. There was some discussion that I wrote down with regards to the library parking. There was some discussion around a potential for splash pads or water features, the restrooms, whether it be locations or other opportunities, and then turf examples. And then I just did want to add a component of accessibility throughout the park, and making sure that the fact that we have a significant grade separation between Brighton to the north and Ramona to the south, and make sure, it sounds like those have been incorporated into the plan, but if there's anything we need to augment from the discussion. So let's see if who wants to have the participating thought process of direction. And I'll start with Mayor Pro Tem Bright and see what kind of other direction or items we want to provide as direction to staff.
Well, I don't think I can really think of anything else at this point in time, other than I'm really a fan of the phased-in approach in our final plan. I appreciate you thinking of that, Mayor. I'd really like to see that from a professional standpoint. So I appreciate that very much. I really like the concept of taking each element and being able to look at it one piece at a time, kind of like the Johnny Cash song, one piece at a time, or however that went. So we can think of these things, for example, the playground. I love the idea of a water element of some sort, and all the other pieces as we get to them. When we talk about the entryway and how we're gonna consider the recognitions and the veterans memorial and that sort of thing. So at this point in time, I don't think I really have anything specific to add. When we get to the particular elements of the park, then I think I would be more apt to have more to say. Does that make any sense?
It very much does. So, yep. So I think if I'm hearing you, you're good with the concept as presented, with obviously an understanding of the conversation we've been having this evening, and incorporating that into the final design. But then as we get into the specific design components, there'll be some further discussion about how those germinate.
Yes, because I don't think that, as far as my understanding, I don't think we're quite ready to get into the nuts and bolts of like what kind of a restroom do we want to do and that sort of thing. So I think at this point in time, I'm pretty satisfied with where we are.
Okay, very good. Then let's turn over to Councilmember Lance and see what kind of comments, direction, or feedback you want to provide.
Sure. From a feedback perspective, I agree with the removal of the gazebo and reworking that area. I think that is smart. I love the idea of sliding mounds. I take my kid to Sinsheimer and Slow, and it has similar features, and it is so much fun. The kids love it, and it's just a lot of fun. So I think that's great. If I didn't take the chance to say this now, I will never get a chance to say it. I think that even if at the end of the day when this comes to fruition and water is, you know, a concern, which it's valid concern, I'd still like to see a water feature element at least included as an alternative or somewhere in the plan so that it doesn't get lost with a future council or even just forgotten and not even really thought of. We don't really have anything like that in South County, and I've always, you know, we don't have a public pool really. So just having a place for kids to be able to play in the water is so nice. And usually people would say, well, it's not really hot enough here in South County, but honestly, with the temps that we've had recently and just climate change already becoming something that we're keeping our eyes on, I think that it would be something we could validate from that perspective. Obviously we'd have to take in water usage and that as a concern, but I'd like to see that implemented somewhere, even if it's like as an alternative or like an addendum item, because it'd be great to have something in South County. I think the closest splash pad is in Atascadero, if I recall. And then my other comment was just, and I've already mentioned it, is I think moving transit is going to be key for this all kind of cohesively coming together, especially as you look at Ramona Garden Park from the view of Ramona. We're not going to be viewing it from top down. Right now it looks so beautiful, but you know, having that attractive component from each angle so that people actually come into the park is important. So I think relocating transit to a more appropriate area might be a priority for me. So those are my comments. Thank you.
Very good. I appreciate those. Let's head over to Councilmember Shaw and see where what input she wants to provide.
Yeah, thank you. I'm really excited about this. We've been planning it. I know I got feedback from my number one constituent, my daughter, saying, hurry up. Because, and probably many members of the public feel this way too, she was back at the first meeting where we talked about putting in this playground. So in her mind, she's been waiting years. So to that end, you know, I would love to see us phase something sooner than later. And I would love the first phase to be the playground. I know it's a huge price tag on the whole thing, but one thing that I had mentioned to the city manager is just, you know, councils change, staff changes. If we phase and phase and phase and phase for so many years, we may just never get there. So, you know, I think it'll be looking at this election, looking at how our budgets go, but I would be very supportive of starting with the playground much sooner than later. And also people's number one response was that they didn't feel as safe in the area. So I would think we also need to get quickly to area number 8 and get moving with that, because unless we really switch up the use of that area, putting in a playground where people don't really feel safe being is not, there won't be the synergy. So I would think maybe we focus on the playground and area 8. And to that end, I did have a question about that area. Area 8. It's going to be, it says programmable exercise.
So does that mean like Director Petker would like have classes there all the time, or would this be equipment? Like I want something that's used like 7 days a week. Like, is that what that would be?
You want me to talk about that?
Like what does programmable exercise mean to you? Is it equipment that people are constantly there using? Is it classes? Like what is it? I want to make sure we can not only build it, but not just say, oh, if they build it, they will come. Like, we make sure they come. So what is it?
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. The goal would be to have programmable activities on a weekly basis, as well as special events on weekends. So something every Monday, something every Tuesday, mix it up. We can reach out to all of our existing instructors, get new instructors, have outdoor classes, outdoor classrooms. The possibilities are endless, and you know the things that we can do there. So that is the goal, and that is the future of that area.
Okay. And do you think it could include something like, you know, you and I have seen at different conferences, like outdoor exercise equipment, so that somebody may just be there when a class isn't going on? Like, there could be maybe something like that too.
Absolutely. We would really like to encourage that stationary stations that people can come and go and exercise throughout the day, even throughout the park. We can work on key locations to have those placed as well.
Okay, yeah, that would be great. The other thing I noticed in the diagram is just there's a row of trees separating the playground from the house right next door. And I think that's a really good idea because you can't really tell on the diagram, but that house is right there. So I really just wanted to note that and make sure that is there. The only part of the plan I'm a little apprehensive with is number 7, the outdoor classroom, which I know would be very much phased in the future because there's a house there right now. But I think before we would maybe build an outdoor classroom, we should do a little outreach with schools to see if they would come use it. Or do we feel it's something that we could program 5 days a week? I just want to make sure it's going to be used because I know the ladies from the library were excited about it. That being said, I mean, we pull teeth to get kids in like once a week for story time. I don't think we could keep that place active like it should be. So what would be the use with the classroom? Would it be ours? Would it be the schools? Like, how would that work?
I think that we need to be open-minded about the programming in that area, but that all of those options that you mentioned are viable. And that we would definitely hope that the library would be a big part of the programming in that space since it's so adjacent to the building. But we could also reach out to other nonprofits and have it active. We definitely want to keep it busy. Mm-hmm. And we want to be aware of the trends that are going to be happening in the future by the time we get to that phase as well. Mm-hmm. So we won't know exactly what we might need at that time, but when we get to that phase, I'm sure we will have a better idea.
Right. Yeah, because that's the one area that, I mean, I know at the library we had the best of intentions, but we once a week we could have it used. The rest of it may sit. So considering it's a phase project, we may even want to, by the time we get to that phase, even have something in mind like, oh, is there a sports court that fits that area? Just maybe some options, just in case. Because I know, for example, Ocean View Elementary has already built their own outdoor classroom. So what if other schools do that? So just something to keep in mind. It doesn't sound like that will be the first thing, obviously, with a house there. But I would just say my only other comments would be just minor ones. I did really like the suggestion of one mom that wrote in about having some handicap accessible. And I know the whole park will be accessible, but maybe an element that a child could use if they were in a wheelchair or different things. So when the time comes, that would be great to talk about. Also just, I like the walking path. And I think when we get that done, maybe just putting mile markers, because a lot of
people like me that are type A, we like to track our mileage. And I think it would really encourage people to do laps, which is what we want. The only other comment I had is I think we should get the playground going ASAP as soon as we can figure out what we can afford. And I think maybe to start the reimagining of the space, if we could maybe remove the gazebo that's eventually going to be removed, because during, I'm so appreciative of the men's club for donating that, but it just has never been used in the way it should have been used, except for when Director Petker uses it. But that has just been limited. And I also see kids go climb on top of it sometimes, which is also not a good use. And sleeping under it was not the good use. So those would be my two comments. If ASAP, we could remove the gazebo and get going on the playground, that would be my preference. And get to Area 8 to really get the place going again. And just as I said in the discussion, I am worried about Area 1. I don't want a Veterans Memorial with people napping behind it. So we just need to be aware of that. But everything's beautiful. I love all the ideas, and I love that quote from Mary Lee. That's just so nice, and that's beautiful. So thank you.
Thank you for all those comments. That's all good feedback. I agree with kind of the playground as kind of the first effort, especially since we have had a donation specifically for equipment and so forth. But the removal of the gazebo, I think we do need to make sure that we do that in a correct fashion. Like you said, the Five Cities great work of refurbishing it. And I think we need to be sensitive to that and the community involvement that they provided that before it reactivates into something else specifically. So, but I think the items that I was concerned with have been addressed, and I think the opportunity for this to be a growing living plan as it develops and moves forward is kind of the intent for where we are this evening. So perhaps I'll turn it over to the city manager and see if there is any further direction that you need from us this evening, or if we say thank you to Melanie and Jeff and the folks from RRM and say we look forward to the final plan coming in late November.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, council members, and thank you again to RRM Design for their great work on this plan. Thank you to Kathy and to Aaron for your stewardship on the staff level. From my perspective, I do think we have direction that we need in bringing back a final master plan for the November 16th council meeting that will include a recommended phasing as the council had requested. And I think that is something that we were anticipating as well at the staff level. This is a bold vision that will be done over time, but that time period is dependent upon the council's direction, funding availability, and priority. And we'll look at that as we go forward, not just in November, but in the next year as we look at our draft capital improvement program. And this will be a component of that program, and the council will have a chance to discuss that further in March of next year. So I think we will have the phasing plan, and I've heard enough interest from the council tonight to have the playground and other features that are related to that be part of that phasing. But again, we'll work with RRM Design on identifying that further and have that come back to you in about a month's time. And we're excited about being able to put a bow on the planning process and then get to an even more fun process, and that's the implementation, to realize this vision and achieve this on behalf of the community. So again, thank you to RRM for sparking the creativity, and thank you our staff team for shepherding this, and we look forward to the next phase from here. And thank you, council, for your great comments and thoughtful dialogue this evening.
Very good. Definitely appreciate everybody's input, and as we close up this discussion, perhaps just kind of planting a seed. I know we've had the recognition discussion, not just for Ramona, but more for other parks and for other opportunities throughout the course of the city. Do we need to have a specific recognition program for Ramona growing out into the city as a whole. I mean, I know we've had discussions previously about recognition for street trees, recognition for parks at other, benches at other locations. Do we want to wrap up a full recognition program? I know that's a little bit of a long-term task, but one that staff would probably need to incorporate into a work program in the next year or so. So maybe we just place as a placeholder, realizing we're not quite ready for it at Ramona, but we may need to take a look at that as we move forward with in advance of some of the public funding, private donations that might come into this park or other parks. So any initial feedback on that thought from council members? So.
I'll go.
Yep.
I do believe we do. I think we need some comprehensive type of a recognition program rather than a kind of a hit and miss here and there. I think it's about time. So I vote yes.
Okay.
Yes, I would agree with that.
It looks like Councilmember Lance. So it's very good. Okay, great. Then that'll be a kind of a future discussion item as staff can bring that back. I think a work program in the next probably the next fiscal year might be more in keeping with the timing that may be necessary for us. So that concludes our work on the Ramona Garden Master Plan this evening. Takes us back to public communications, where if there is any member of the public that would like to speak under public communications, please call in at 805-321-6639. And I understand that we do have someone on the line. So City Clerk, if you would.
Yes, we have Janelle Wall on the line, and she actually wanted to speak on item 8.
He is now exiting.
Okay.
Oh, I apologize. I misunderstood. I thought that was under public comment. So, Janelle, if you would feel free to speak on under public comment, and if you want to address comments on item number 8, we look forward to them.
Yes. Good evening. I just live a half mile down Brighton from the park, and I'm a regular, do my laps and loops around the park. I really like the programming that's been presented. I'm very interested about the new restrooms. I know lately there seems to be more homeless camping out under the gazebo and some dust and such. It gets a little gets scary over there. I really love the concerts in the park, and to have more things happening at the park, I think, would be great. And with this redesign and the phasing, it would just bring in more people, more families, and more youth. Thank you.
I definitely appreciate those comments, and that kind of solidifies that we are on the right track with hearing your comments and realizing that a lot of the work that has gone into this is going to meet the needs of a larger and larger number of the community members who want to utilize this park. So definitely appreciate that. Let's see, is there any other members of the public on for public communication, Madam City Clerk?
No, there is not.
Very good. Then I will go ahead and bring it back to the council. And I believe that takes us to council committee reports. Bear with me as I get back to my agenda. Make sure that's where we're at. Looks like, yes, council committee reports. Let's start with Council Member Lance. Did you have any reports, committee reports that you needed to share?
I do. I attended Visit Slow Cal's advisory board meeting last week. And it focused on basically getting feedback on what they were doing and what they want to do moving forward. Some key takeaways was their COVID response, what they've been doing with that, what feedback they thought would be important moving forward with that. They did reduce their balanced budget by 72%, which seems really high. Their salary reduction by 20%, 5 full-time and 3 part-time positions. So they've really leaned out their operations significantly. They assisted, you know, with all the open and safe signage, with the START guide, which obviously was not fully implemented by South County, but they did help facilitate those conversations. Another big takeaway was their equity and inclusion statement. They're really making a effort to move forward with that. Just having a really more inclusive strategy as far as tourism, marketing, and what kind of tourists we're bringing to the communities, and what kind of, you know, vendors they're working with, what kind of photographers, what kind of media, what kind of contractors. And they actually created this really extensive kind of a matrix spreadsheet and tracking all that. So they really want to get a good set of data points so that they know how well they're doing in their goals for being more equitable and inclusive in their overall tourism strategy and contractor agreements. There's just a lot of discussion about that and, you know, being more inclusive, how it trickles down into our community as well. The more diverse tourists we bring to this community, the more diversity we'll have for, you know, restaurants and activities and events, even for our locals. So I thought that was all really good discussion. One thing that I really liked that they're pursuing, two things that are kind of high on their list is they're working with Cal Poly on a customer service training certification. So really trying to gear up our customer service workforce and kind of taking it up. You know, a lot of people think customer service is kind of very, you know, low level job, but they're wanting to make it really important and educate people on the importance of that. And having a certification program will help people, you know, not only be educated and we'll have better customer service across the county, but also maybe also demand higher salaries and hopefully maybe have better cost of living ratio to live in SoCal. Another thing they are working on is event and festival strategy. So right now there's some talk on the call about how each city kind of does their own thing when it comes to events and festivals, and they're hoping to kind of build a communal dashboard, kind of a one place for everybody to go so that, you know, you're not kind of, oh, I saw on Facebook this and I saw on Instagram this and this event was on that website. It would be an opportunity for people to go to see all that. And also for different cities to kind of interchange, you know, if there's some opportunity for us to kind of really band together and move around events as appropriate for each of our locations, then it could bring more people to each of our locations if we're all kind of on the same page. Once obviously COVID, we're on the other side of it and events are happening again. Because I remember pre-COVID, I would be on all different websites because I'm a festival junkie and I love street fests and anything and everything like that. So I was always looking for the next thing, whether it was, you know, avocado, margarita festival or whatever. So I think that was really great. And just for the foreseeable future, as far as a marketing perspective, they're really focusing on the driving market, obviously with COVID-19. So although in the future they still want to tap into the international market, which they were starting to do pre-COVID, right now it makes the most sense for them to focus on the driving market. And if I missed anything, Matt, feel free to chime in when you do your city manager report, because he was on the call as well. But I think that is the gist of it, and probably more than you cared to hear me talk about. I'm done.
Gotcha. Thank you for that report. And actually, I just did have one potential element. Was there any discussion about the departure of the airport director and perhaps a search for a new airport director?
I don't believe that was discussed. I did have to leave the call like 5 minutes early, so I don't know if that meant if they talked about that, but I don't recall that.
Okay.
No, they did not, Mr. Mayor.
Okay, gotcha. I know Mr. Boomin, the airport director, is leaving to go up to San Francisco, so I'm sure there will be a search for a new airport director, of which I would imagine Visit Slow would be involved in that. So let's head over to Councilmember Shaw, see what committee assignments you want to report on.
I had a meeting of the Air Pollution Control District. As always, we got a lot of questions and comments about the dunes, but at this point, the dunes are, their opening and closure is more in the hands of the Coastal Commission. It's really not having to do with the Air Pollution Control District. Although I did just get word that we did reach the next agreement phase and in the dust control plan, that agreement was reached between State Parks and APCD. So October 23rd, there will be an update meeting. Where people can hear how the dust control plan is going. It's on October 23rd, and it starts at 9 a.m., and it's a Zoom, so you can even keep it on in the background if you would like. And the main thing that happened at the meeting is we had to appoint a new person to the hearing board because the engineer spot was open. So we've had the same engineer on there who's a Cal Poly professor for 20 years, but this time the majority of the board said he was not properly qualified as an engineer because he was missing some California credential. So he was replaced with his alternate that happens to also work for Phillips 66. And there could be some potential conflicts in the future with him weighing in on the dunes. We're really not sure, but that's something that may have to be looked into depending on the issues. But other than that, he'd been an alternate for some time, so I'm sure he's aware and has been trained. But it was an odd choice, but as you might guess, I was in the minority vote on that one. So then we had an encampments meeting. Oh, and also an interesting project that's coming up in air pollution control is a new grant program for schools to clean their air with air filters. And you can only qualify if you're in what's called an AB 1550 community, which is parts of Paso, San Luis, Morro Bay, Los Osos, and Oceano. However, the Napomo Mesa schools self-nominated themselves, meaning hopefully these air filters will be getting into schools. It makes me happy when kids are getting clean air, but it makes me also, you know, we think about the state of our world and the smoke and everything that's making these kids have to have air filters in school. So I'm happy and not happy about that, but it was interesting. So then I went to the HSOC encampments meeting. I actually chaired the meeting because the chair couldn't go. And we learned a lot about, we're talking about some countywide and more solid solutions to encampments, because clearly what's going on now of, first of all, during COVID, you're not even supposed to be clearing encampments, but clearing people from one area and then they go to another area, it's not a real solution. So we have a subcommittee that's working on things. We also have people from Caltrans on, and more to come on that. The main thing is safe parking is getting going all across the county in different ways. And there's going to be a pilot program for safe parking even in South County. So it's somewhere in Arroyo Grande. I'm not even sure where. It's not a large number of spaces. But if you do need somewhere to safe park, you can contact the Five Cities Homeless Coalition and they will help you to get hooked into that. So we're hoping it goes well and we're hoping it can grow. But so there's safe parking through the Five Cities Homeless Coalition in South County. In Paso, there is also safe parking. actually, I think it's through, you can contact Echo in Atascadero and they can let you know. And then there's also a safe parking program at Prado, which has which has 19 spots. And that's going well for now. So that was all I had. Thanks.
Very good. Thank you for that update. And then Mayor Pro Tem, right, did you have a question or did you have updates? And you are still muted.
I had a question for Miriam. Do we not have safe parking at the campground at the state campground?
I don't think so. That was going right when COVID started. They were doing that for people, especially that needed to be isolated, but that ended, I want to say, around June.
Okay. And,
yeah.
And just to add to that, council members, I believe that was actually at the county campground, the Coastal Dunes campground, along Highway 1 rather than a state campground. Ms. Shaw is correct that ended in June as part of the phase out of that particular program. And now this New South County effort will be underway here shortly.
Okay, thank you. Thank you for that clarification. Are you coming to me now?
Yes.
I can run this meeting from here on out. Sorry. My meetings all start the first week, so I've got slow cog and all those starting. So I didn't have any meetings these last 2 weeks. Thank you.
And I was feeling like I was going to be left out because I didn't have any since our last meeting either. So at least the two of us are together on that. So I will go ahead and close council committee reports, bring it over to League of California Cities. No policy committee meetings that I'm aware of. Matt can probably update us on one that he's going to have later this week at the League. But I did want to update the council that I got a confirmation that our presentation will be Thursday at 2:15 as part of the League. The League calendar for Thursday's event, and we have already recorded it, so it's in the can, so to speak, and we're looking forward to taking live questions as we go along there. So I'll turn it over to Miriam first, see if there's anything that she needs to update us from on as a League standpoint before Wednesday.
No, you know, and that reminds me, we had talked about, as a Channel Counties division, having kind of like a Zoom happy hour together, and I haven't heard anything about it, but I'm not the president of Channel Counties anymore, so I, you know, we'll see. One thing I wanted to ask everyone, because the format's so new, I've received a confirmation that I'm confirmed. Are we supposed to be like going through and marking what things we're going to, or am I missing something? Or do you think we're just going to get an email like tomorrow or Wednesday?
But I know from a presenter standpoint, I'm supposed to get a access email tomorrow.
Okay.
With a Zoom access and so forth, I'm anticipating that we'll get the same as attendees as well.
Okay. All right. I just want to make sure you guys weren't all logged in and had your conference all set, and I was just, I missed the email or something. All right. Good. Thank you.
Very good. Next, I'll turn it over to our city manager, Matt Bronson, and see if he has any updates on League of California Cities.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. My policy committee, the Governance, Transparency, and Labor Relations Committee, did meet last week. The topic was to take positions on two different items. One, the social media resolution that the council considered the last meeting, but did not take a position on or stayed neutral on. The committee did vote on a 19-14 vote to recommend that to the General Assembly for approval. That was the one where it would call for Congress to amend the Communications Decency Act to require social media companies to be responsible for content and take limitation and be held liable for content that was posted online with regards to potential criminal activity. Very controversial issue that the General Assembly will now be taking up next week. And I think Mayor Lee, you are the representative to that, as I recall. So that's a topic that will be coming forward to you coming up later this week. And then the committee also voted to support the proposition that would end Prop 215, which eliminated affirmative action in California. The committee did vote to support that resolution that would go on now to the League of Board of Directors, which Catherine Rashaw, you are now on that body, so you'll be considering that this week. That's all.
Very good. Thank you for those. Next, we'll go over to Council Communications and see if there's any members of the Council that wanted to share anything. So let's start with Mayor Pro Tem Wright.
Thank you. Well, most of the Council Communications were regarding Nacimiento, so I shared those. There was an issue with some signs that kind of dealt with, I guess. I guess that's pretty much it.
Okay, very good. Councilmember Lance. Nope. Okay. Councilmember Shaw.
Be sure you vote. I got my I voted sticker because I voted and I used the mail-in ballot drop box that's right at City Hall. Mm-hmm. I think it's there 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. or 5. But it's there on weekdays, and it's super safe because it's right in front of a police station. So I really appreciated dropping my ballot in there, and my mom and dad did too. And now I get to wear my sticker. So please vote, vote, vote. And the key is, as soon as you vote, a lot of these people who are calling you will stop calling you. Because they are able to keep track of it. So if you don't want any more calls, get your ballot in.
Very nice. So I just have two council communications, one of which is as I've been out and about talking to folks. So one of the coming up is street sweeping and the ability we have to monitor street sweeping and the effectiveness of it because of our parked vehicles. So I don't know from a council standpoint if we want to have an update early in 2021 as to the status of our street sweeping contract and how better to make it effective so it's not being the middle of the road that's being swept while there's cars parked against the curb. So I see definitely a yes by Miriam. Thumbs up by Councilmember Lance and Councilmember or Mayor Pro Tem Bright. And now I'm going to turn it over to the city manager who may derail the timing of all of this.
No derailment, but just to respond, just for information, we can certainly talk about it further in 2021, but just to let you know that we do have a schedule on our website. We have a route map that's shows where we do sweep all across the city, and we do indicate that we ask people to move their property from the street during the actual sweeping date. So if that's not being done, that's not really an issue for the contractor. That's an issue for the city and how we would enforce that kind of action. I've lived previously in places where there was a much more vigorous effort that takes a resource effort from a police standpoint to do that. So if that was a direction of the council at a later discussion, we could certainly look at that. It's, again, more of a city enforcement than it is what the contractor will do. They will sweep where they can. If there's a vehicle there, they can't sweep there. So that's a different, that's a discussion that we can have at a later date.
Okay. Very good. Some people is interested in having that conversation, and we'll see how that continues to progress. So another council communication is that on Friday, I do have an opportunity to speak at the Chamber Leadership Class 2, the last day of their session. So depending upon the timing of that, I may call upon my alternate to participate at the league policy. So I think, Miriam, you are my alternate, correct? Cool.
So depending upon how that goes. So with that, I think that takes us to our city manager's reports and comments. So Matt, what do you have to share tonight?
Sure, just a few other items. One, just to tell the council that this Wednesday at 2 o'clock, our Citizen Oversight Committee on Revenue Measures will be having its annual meeting to review the report for the Measure X06 expenditures and the Measure K14 expenditures and project list. That will come to the council at a later meeting this fall as our annual schedule for transparency on revenue measures indicates. So more to come on that. Again, 2 o'clock this Wednesday, that will be a virtual meeting, and we'll also have a call-in option for those who would like to call in for that. Our sidewalk project on South 10th Street and Manhattan Avenue is making great progress. You see the new sidewalks, the corner ramps coming to life on South 10th Street. Next, we're working on Manhattan Avenue right near the Grange Building. Great project that will just allow for much more pedestrian accessibility in that area, particularly once we go back to school and have that be a focal point. Again, that was a Safe Route to Schools project that was funded around that particular school, which is Grover Beach Elementary. We finished up the water main break repair at South 13th Street and Seabright Avenue. We had the final striping done last week, and it's a great testament to what we did together in dealing with a very significant water main break on that street. So now you pass by it and you don't know it's there, but just to know that there was a significant effort that your staff team and contractors did to rectify that situation. And then lastly, to the earlier point from Councilmember Shaw, the elections process is well underway. We do have the drop-off box in front of City Hall from 8 o'clock a.m. to 5 o'clock p.m. Monday through Friday. We do bring it inside every night, and we periodically will take out the ballots and bring them over to the county office. Our clerk and deputy city clerk are deputized to do that, so we have that ability to do that safely. And just to know that the ballots are safe, there is a lot of security with them, and the community is taking advantage of that spot. We're very pleased to be able to have that. And also, we'll have an in-person voting service center at the community center beginning October 31st through Election Day, November 3rd as well. With that, I will yield the floor. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you for those updates. Next, we'll go to our city attorney for any reports and comments. Mr. Hale.
Good evening. What I was going to mention, I can actually do in closed session, so I think I'll wait till then.
Okay. Very good. Just to our closed session, and if you would introduce that item, sir, we will then proceed to see if there's any members of the public that want to speak on closed. Introduce it first.
Okay. We are going to convene in closed session for a public employee performance evaluation consistent with Government Code Section 54957B1. And the title happens to be City Attorney, me.
Very good. Thank you. And I'll turn it over to our city clerk and see if there's anyone on the line for public comments on closed session.
No, there's no one on the line for public comment.
Very good. Thank you so much. And then we will to closed session. And if I remember correctly, this is going to be the council and Mr. Hale by ourselves. So everyone else can have a good evening.